listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Head of my time, sometimes years out. Certain powers that be won't let me get my ideas out, and that make me want to move and get my, that make me want to go and get my advance out and move to Oklahoma and just live in my aunt's house. Yeah, I romance the thought of leaving it all behind. Kanye, step away from the line, like when I was on the grind in the 1999. Before model chicks was bending over or dealerships asked me Benz or Rover, man, if I could just get one beat on Hova, we could get up off this cheap ass sofa. What the summer of the shy got to offer? A 18 euro, sell drugs or get a job, gotta play gyro. My dog worked at Taco Bell, hooked us up plural five. A week later, the manager count churros. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
We're in the house on a Sunday, very special Sunday, the halfway season finale of Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And then of course the next year week Game of Thrones turns back, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Getting them thrones back. Mm-hmm. Or thrones back, I don't know, no problems. Getting thrones back. So I can't wait. Of course, you can find this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Search the Black Guy Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. Appreciate everybody that does that. The official weapon of the show is
the taser.
The unofficial sport.
It's bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. And today's podcast is sponsored, is double sponsored. It's brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. They have a brand new YouTube video, and it's starring Karen. Karen is talking to Lisa Saint Odom. They have a good conversation. It's after we did voiceover work and a voice acting, and they're talking about, you know, being women in their respective industries, whether it's acting or podcasting, and it's a good conversation. Just check the show notes. The link to the YouTube video will be there, and I'll make sure to have it on the episode in the show notes on the episode page on the blackouttips.com.
Yay!
So you can see the whole conversation. And then
I love her. And mm-hmm. For those of you who watch this video and you're like, who is she? She's the person that does the voice to the intro.
Mm-hmm. Because Rod and Karen are hot. That's Lisa. Make sure you guys check out Loot Crate. Loot Crate is sponsoring this episode. It's a monthly mystery crate filled with exclusive items from the biggest and best pop culture franchises. Go to lootcrate.com/TBGWT and enter code TBGWT to save $3 off any new subscription. We will be opening up a box later on in the episode, but as always, they always drop the the best gifts and stuff. People always ask me where I get certain things, and I'm like, Loot Crate, man. All right, let's get into the episode and the news and all that stuff that's going on. All kinds of stuff happening in the world. Where should we start?
Mm-hmm.
I guess we can start rest in peace to Nelson Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
He played Lafayette on True Blood.
Mm-hmm. That's where most people know him from.
Yeah, one of the few reasons worth watching that whole series was Lafayette, man. He was a badass, and and he could act his ass off.
Yes, he could.
But yeah, he had complications with heart failure, according to his publicist. So yeah, man, rest in peace. That was wild. I mean, 39 is not that old, man.
He's very young.
So they asked, his family asked in lieu of flowers, donations be made to the Janice Center, or the Restoration Ministries Church of God in Christ. So wow. That just came out of nowhere. Speaking of money donating, Young Thug donated all his New York City concert proceeds to Planned Parenthood.
Wonderful.
Yeah, all the proceeds from I know, and by the way, I don't know what to make of Young Thug. I don't keep up with his personal life and views and shit. And I know there's a lot of people that like try to put stuff onto him, like, you know, he'll wear a dress or something, and people be like, we should support that. It's challenging toxic masculinity, da 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 da. But then I've seen videos of him like saying some wild shit, and I'm just like, okay, I don't know. Well, I don't know that this guy's in on y'all's academic version of his sexuality and shit. But I do think it's dope to donate the proceeds to Planned Parenthood. He said, I was a teenage parent. Unplanned Parenthood is beautiful. And the thing with Planned Parenthood is that it helps so many people.
It does.
There's a lot of especially black femmes, you know, black women, black trans women, black, right. There's a lot of places that will literally in certain parts of the country, they just will not provide you healthcare, period. They
right.
And Planned Parenthood is sometimes the only option for people.
For birth control, right. Mammograms, pap smear, HIV testing, condoms, like a lot of times. Put like this, I've come to the conclusion there are a lot of people out there that have never used Planned Parenthood, never used the service, and really don't know what the fuck they do, and just have these preconceived notions about it, and they don't want to learn, and for a lot of people it's just a bad thing. Or either for some people it's one of these things where Planned Parenthood did some fucked up things in the past. But my thing about that is that no matter what institution you talk about in our country, including the foundation of this country itself, is fucked up.
Right.
So there's nothing you can do to get around the fucked upness. I'm not talking about what they did years ago. I'm talking about as of today, they have provided, I've used it. Mm-hmm. You know, my family members have used it. Some of you listening have used it, and know that if it was not for them, you would be in a lost situation, and you would not have gotten the help or the medical necessities that you needed for this service.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of organizations in America have auspicious beginnings, right? And even like HBCUs, which, you know, we guys advocate for, and we definitely support, and we went to one. Even with HBCUs, like, there's some HBCUs where you read the literature about how they were founded and what the founding people thought about it, and it reads horribly in 2017. Yes, like, in 2017, sir. It's like, oh, y'all really saw this as like a way to, you know, educate and like to basically to de-savagize these black people. Like, you know, it's shit like that where it's like, you know, the default of the black man is lazy and terrible and all this shit. And it's like, yeah, this country was, you know, we're talking about a country that only white men counted as human beings,
right?
When it was founded. So yeah, I'm sure pretty much any organization, if you go back far enough, has some fucked up people in it and some fucked up beginnings. But I look at what Planned Parenthood does now and I'm like, yeah, I support that, you know what I mean? Like, because especially with the way healthcare is under attack, some people won't have any healthcare if not for Planned Parenthood after a while. So anyway, good on Young Thug, man. I don't, and like I said, I don't know much about that dude personally, so if he's doing some fuck shit next week, then he's doing some fuck shit. I ain't got nothing else to say. A Florida man sits on a gun and shoots it himself in the penis.
White.
I don't have his race here. But yeah, gun safety, y'all. Got to make sure everybody can have a gun. It was his right. That's what I say. Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm, it was his right.
He's 38 years old. The gun was in the driver's seat of the car when he sat on it. He was taken to the hospital by a woman who told police the man was sitting in a Nissan Altima by himself, came into their home on Freedom Crossing Trail in a panic and ran straight to the bathroom. She said she followed him and said there was a gunshot wound to his penis, so she took him to the hospital where he underwent surgery.
Mm-hmm. But when Smith and Weston was like, hey, what we need to do is put safety locks. Hey, what we need to do is put fingerprints or codes or something on guns so that guns don't randomly just go off, and yeah, y'all motherfuckers fought them against that. Maybe he wouldn't, I might be wrong, but maybe he wouldn't have got shot in the penis if his butt would have sat on it.
Well, he also was convicted of cocaine possession in 2004, and that means he's a convicted felon, so he may face charges of even possessing the gun in the first place. I feel like if you shoot yourself in the penis, that's the one time where they could be like, you know what, time served,
right?
Like, you shouldn't have had a gun, but I think you learned your lesson. You don't have a penis anymore, and you shot yourself in it. Pornhub is now syncing videos so with sex toys. Yep. Pornhub, the world's largest pornographic video sharing site, has partnered with sex toy manufacturers to launch a new interactive category. The new category will feature videos that have specifically been created to use the Kiru Onyx and the Fleshlight launch. To experience the new category, users have to download the Field Connect app and pair it with one of those devices. At the moment, both devices are for men. But in the press release, for the new category, Pornhub promises to add content to support for female toys. Well, of course, ladies have to wait. Mm-hmm. So they can get that orgasm. You know, we got to come first, guys. Yeah, everybody knows the rules.
Right. Versus just waiting until you are able to launch for both parties at one time.
The videos will send signals to wireless devices, which will in turn react to visuals accordingly. The name for this technology is teledildonics, which
is
teledildonics. Teledildonics, dildo onyx. I don't, teledildonics. Maybe is that how it's pronounced. Anyway,
some uncool white man, scientist, bro, dude, did this one. That name ain't cool at all. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Teledildonics. Is amazing.
And it sounds like a transformer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Teledildonics would be the nastiest transformer ever. Transform and roll out. Everybody else like, and then it's just like,
people like roll out and make it nasty.
Roll out and let them see it.
Yeah, well, roll out and show them what you got.
I just want to know
if it roll out and let me see them yams.
I just want to know if it worked. Like, I feel like, question. How would you know if it works? Ain't everybody's body and stuff different? Like,
it is.
I don't know. Does it have settings? It's like, listen, my penis really needs the full experience, you know? So yeah, I don't know, man. Anyway, next. A jury awards $1.26 million to Glenn Burnie. Wait, actually, you know what, I can't put this here. This has to go and then fucking with black people, there's no fucking way. All right, let me go back to, we don't want to do that yet. Let's go back to another one. There's a new cafe in Switzerland where you can get oral sex with your coffee.
No thank you.
You want a little cream in your, no? at the end of the year, a new coffee shop called Fellatio Cafe will open up.
Not high, not Newsday.
I mean, if you're gonna do it, I mean, it shouldn't be a secret.
Right.
I don't want to accidentally walk into your shop and you pull my dick out. Like, that's, you know.
No. I understand it. Like, look. When you walk through this door, if you walk past the fellatio door, that's on you, dog.
Yeah, I would have went with Starfucks, but, you know, can't all be winners.
Well, Starlick?
No.
Starsuck?
Starsucks is good. That's good, too. Welcome to Starsucks.
Hi, can I help you?
We'll open.
Would you like some hazelnut and a blowjob on the side?
Sir, that's clearly not a grande in your pants. We'll open up.
No, sir. This is the regular size. Don't lie to me. I've been doing this long enough. Would you like me to frap your frappe?
They will open up in Geneva, Switzerland, where you can get a hot cup of Joe with a side of blowjob. The firm behind the Swiss cafe Face Girl says customers will be able to order coffee, then select a sex worker of their choice from an iPad to give them a blowjob. Just how much will it cost? 60 Swiss francs, or about $50. So plus 5 francs for the coffee. So that's like $55.
I hope them girls protecting themselves. I mean, is there like,
maybe
is it half and half, like a see-through table or some shit? Because I'm cutting your dick. I don't want you dropping coffee on me. I did a glass table or something to protect me from the hot latte mocha choker you drinking up there over the top of my head.
That's a good point. I'm assuming there will be some type of protection. If not, it's going to lead to one of the biggest lawsuits of all time.
Come on.
I mean, this is pretty predictable. You're not, most people can't drink coffee while getting filleted, you know?
I wonder, is there going to be kind of, and maybe I'm thinking from a sex worker perspective, kind of protection for the women? What happened if he's not satisfied with the blowjob and decides to put coffee on her?
What?
What happened if he paying for a blowjob, right? Mm-hmm. What happened if he don't like the blowjob? He feel like he not getting his $60 worth. You know, men ain't shit. So what happened if he decides, hey, I don't like your blowjob?
That seemed like it would be the same thing that would happen if at any Starbucks, if you poured the coffee on a person that was working at Starbucks, right? I mean, why would that be different?
But the barista at Starbucks ain't sucking your dick either.
I know, but that's okay. I'm not sure I follow. Like, I feel like that you would still get the same penalty. You know, like, whether they sucking your dick or not, you can't just pour fucking hot coffee on people. It's not
that's
like
true.
Oh, it's different for sex workers. You pour hot coffee on a sex worker, now you, that's a crime. Like, it's a hot, it should be a crime if you pour that shit on a nigga working register, if a motherfucker come with a mop
it
and you pour
be.
Hot coffee, like, yeah, that's, you going to jail.
Yeah, but they feel like I'm getting a real service now.
My thing is, what happens if they take all day? Like, I gotta, like, you gotta order another coffee or something. If you got one of those, like, two coffee blowjobs and shit. But yeah, apparently in Thailand, there's similar establishments. Maybe people are already doing this. I don't know.
Apparently so.
Yeah. I don't know. There's gotta be videos of this online somewhere. I gotta
go to
X Hamster and find out.
I know. And my thing is that, is it just, coffee? Do they sell croissants or anything on the side, or we just do coffee? Cause you know, with Starbucks do more than just coffee. You can get a coffee and a piece of pound cake.
Those are the important questions, Karen.
Right. If we gonna go full fledged, let's do it all.
Yeah. That Pornhub has blowjob coffee porn videos.
Oh shit.
I mean, I guess it's blowjob with your coffee, sir. X videos. So this is like a whole thing. Motherfuckers been doing. Wow. It's literally porn based on everything. There's probably podcasting porn somewhere.
Who knows?
Yep. Wow. All right. Well, anyway.
Yeah, learn something new. Like I said, them the questions I want to know, you know. And am I going to have to, you know, y'all paying $5 for the coffee, and then they probably charge you another $5 or $7 for whatever Danish or sweet or a la carte you order on the side. So, yeah, they're making their money.
A man that got caught having sex with a donkey is being forced to marry the donkey, according to the owner. A farmer who was caught having sex with a donkey should marry the animal, said his owner, who has allegedly gone to tribal leaders to force the nuptials. The pervert was caught assaulting the donkey by his horrified owner in the village of Roadhouse in Limpopo province, South Africa. According to local media, the animal's owner reported the sex attack to village elders and claimed it was not the first time a man interfered with the donkey, said the local Capricorn Voice newspaper. The ass's owner allegedly demanded that the farmer be forced to take the donkey as a wife. He said, when I went to him, he said he was sorry about it, but I'm not satisfied, as it was not the first time he committed the same act. Yeah, you're not gonna be able to just, like, why marry the donkey when you're getting the sex for free? So you gotta make him marry him, because, you know,
he was like, this is your goddamn donkey now. All
right, he's treating you treating it like a jump off. Okay, have some respect. The farmer reportedly refused to appear before the elders. Acting headman Daniel Ngobini said, because of the man's absence, we transferred the matter to the Shigalo Tribal Authority Council. Thompson Ntumalu, the secretary of the Shigalo Tribal Authority Council, said it was investigating. He said, we summoned the man. He will appear to answer to charges against him.
We sure he might leave town.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. I mean, you can legally marry a donkey over there?
Apparently so. Can't do that here in the States. Put it like this. At least to the best of my knowledge, and it be considered a legal marriage.
Here's my thing. If you can legally marry a donkey, I feel like gay marriage better be legal there.
Come on.
Like, y'all better have marriage equality. Cause that's, I feel like y'all, there's no excuse at that point.
Mm-mm.
You know, that's just y'all being bigots. If you're like, nah, but still, this marriage equality thing, that's a little too far for y'all. Now, if you want to marry a damn, a borough, that's cool. But, a restaurant owner shames customers. Haters are not welcome. A Memphis restaurant deleted its social media presence after publicly shaming a customer who gave the restaurant a bad review. Imagine Vegan Cafe is located on Young Avenue in Memphis.
I'm assuming Tennessee.
Sure.
Okay.
After a customer gave the restaurant a 2-star review on Google, the owner of the restaurant called the customer out on Facebook. The post received thousands of reactions and the restaurant replied to many of them, continuing to defend its position. A couple hours after WMC Action News 5 shared the story, Imagine Vegan's post was deleted and the page can no longer be found on Facebook. Below is a picture showing the post in question. Imagine Vegan Cafe says, I'm about to start calling out names and pictures of people who leave us bad reviews, especially when it deals with our children. You will no longer be allowed to come and dine at Imagine, especially when you lie about our babies. We do not need or want your business, but be our guest to go and eat at other vegan restaurants down the street. This is going to be fun. You've thoroughly irritated Mama Bear, and it has like 12 exclamation points.
Woo!
We're starting with Chelsea.
Surprise, who went on Instagram?
We're starting with Chelsea Bartley. Damn, she did name names.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who reads this and instantly is scared this might affect our business, I cannot begin to tell you how much we do not care. Haters are not welcome at Imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? Vegan people got time on their hands, and motherfucker, they're going to be standing outside your shit protesting. I know I would. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. And I don't know what it is, but it sounds like if several people have complained about your children, that means that you might have your kids like kind of running around the place. They're like, I want to eat. I want to eat and enjoy my meal. I don't want to deal with your children running around me while I'm trying to. I paid for an establishment of vegan, whatever I'm eating. I didn't pay for children on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Not your children. Other customers is another thing, but you know, you run the place. It's completely different.
Yeah. Imagine Vegan said customers lied about the owner's baby in the review, which thoroughly irritated Mama Bear. The Google review came from a person who said she ate there all the time and even said she'd probably return. The unedited review can be read below. Oh, okay, hold on, let me find. Okay, on the real, I eat here all the time. I still probably will. This is a 2-star review. Because I like to go out and there are a few options available to me, but y'all, listen. During my visit, a bare butt naked baby was running around, stood up on the table with his black, thayer, so dirty feet, and I don't know what that means, and bent over to show me his butthole. Oh! Well, I mean, that is different than, everyone knows that listen to this, I am the most tolerant pro kid, let the kids be everywhere, it doesn't bother me. If a baby walked up and got on my table and showed me his asshole, then yes, that is different, and that baby that is too much. And we all have our limits, guys.
And it sounds like I said, it sounds like these were the owner children and not other customers' children. So who knows how often this may have happened to other customers? Maybe not to this extent.
Oh yeah,
but,
okay.
But I
think butthole that would clearly be a health code violation, and several people would have reported it.
But maybe your children walking around and things like that, which is fine. I'm like you, it's okay. But like you say, it comes to this and go, oh okay, like yeah. Now the line has been drawn.
I wish I was exaggerating. This is like when I'm eating and it's the owner's kids. An older kid came over and started like yodeling and staring at me during my meal. I was so uncomfortable. Like, I get it's a family establishment and kids do weird things, but naked baby was running around for like 15 minutes while all the workers are just standing that but to the side talking and laughing over it. And for my food, I could heat up a tofurkey sandwich just as well in under half the time. Damn, we got 171 likes too.
Like I said, this is probably not the first time
mm-hmm.
that somebody has pointed out their children to them. Mm-hmm. Or if it's not their children, an employee, whoever these children are, they're associated with the main family in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And it sounds like they just let these children do whatever they want to do in a restaurant establishment. And most people are probably okay with that. But it's like, hey, dog, this is where I draw my line.
Yeah, I feel like this is a totally reasonable review, especially since you still gave 2 stars. I mean, to me, that's a 1-star experience. I don't, you know, maybe
or no star experience, because it's one of the things where it just makes you mad. And for the owner to have the nerve to call me out for stating the facts, like I'm wrong, you know. And the thing is, the owner went so hard, you actually want to go out of business, don't you? You don't want people to come back, because as people learned about this, people are gonna go somewhere else, and don't let another vegan place come in and taste better. Oh, that's a wrap for you, dog.
Fair. So then we got you know, that post I just read about the Mama Bear is irritated. Chelsea Bartley, I'm calling you out. So later they posted a response to clarify what happened with this bad review. This is what happened. We have a 1-year-old child who has just discovered she can undo the Velcro on her diaper. She is also currently potty training. One day last week, she got out of my husband and my sight, took off her diaper, and ran across the restaurant. She was quickly apprehended and redressed. Someone decided that it was necessary to leave a very nasty review about it. Not only about it, but a 5-year-old who was trying to say hello to her and she was very uncomfortable and offended. This irritated the heck right out of me, because we clearly state on our menu that children could be around the restaurant. I called her out for it, and she apparently didn't like it. Now trolls and others are finding it necessary to bash a restaurant they've never been to. Here's one thing I will say. I do bet that she was exaggerating somewhat in her first review. The whole, like, it was 15 minutes that the kid was running around. The other kid stood over me and just started yodeling at me and staring at me for 5 minutes. Cause people do embellish in those type of Yelp reviews. People embellish all the fucking time. So I mean, you know, it could be embellishment, but I mean, it sounded like it happened. I don't know. It still sounds pretty unacceptable. Like, and you know, people don't sign up to watch you raise your kid just because they go to your restaurant, right? Even if it's on the menu.
Correct. And I guarantee you, somewhere, fine print, small, it's not like you got it up with the title. Look, you know what I mean? You know, it's not like you got big and bold, oh, our kid's gonna be here, you know. And it's also one of the things where maybe they just shouldn't have been there. And that's something that, you know, people don't want to talk about that either. Or if they're gonna be there, they need to be in a place where they can't, you know, roam like this. Because like I said, most people are fine with it, but when you deal with customers that are new to the area, not familiar with the area, and don't know, it's gonna be a culture shock. Because what restaurant do you go into, even if it's family owned, where children move around and they're not other customers' children's?
That's a lot, man.
That is a lot.
That's like the whitest thing ever. I could have put it in white people news. It was so white. Although I don't know the race of the people involved, so that's, I'm definitely assuming a lot, but come on.
Oh yeah, I'm assuming that they white too, because if they were not white, you'd have read that with a lot of racial slurs.
What you mean?
You know,
because they would have been like, oh, this nigga came in with this mother. Oh, okay, I see what you're
and
saying.
And even if they would have, the comments that other people would have had racial slurs, like people calling upset. Yeah. Like, people better realize.
I mean, it's Memphis. Memphis is a black ass city.
Come on. And when you talk about anybody brown, that's the first thing people do whenever they want to make comments and things like that. Even if the initial person hadn't called out the races, the child's race, other people commenting would have said something.
That's a great point. Americans who can't afford their homes is up to 146%. It's not 146% of homeowners. It's the number of people who can't afford their homes, but you know, is jumped up in the past 16 years. 38 million American households can't afford their housing, which is up 146% in the past 16 years, according to a recent Harvard housing report.
I've seen studies and statistics that talk about that, you know, most people can't even afford a 2-bedroom apartment, you know, no matter trying to get a home.
Yeah, it's scary because everybody's like, get a home. But get a home is like the one, it's that one, not one kind, but it's a very specific type of debt where you may feel you can swing it, but when it becomes readily apparent that you can't, you're stuck there until you can get from under that shit. Under federal guidelines, households that spend more than 30% of their income on housing costs are considered cost burden and will have difficulty affording basic necessities like food, clothing, transportation, and medical care. But the number of Americans struggling with their housing costs has risen almost 16 million in 2001 to 38 million in 2015, according to the census data crunched in the report. Mm-hmm. That's more than double.
And what a lot of people don't talk about? It's a lot of goddamn children in those numbers. Like, when people give these numbers include children. But go ahead.
Well, the children, you mean of the people that are living there.
Right, when they go sick, you go, okay, let's say you just talking about adults. There are children attached to a lot of those adults.
Right.
So those numbers are actually larger than what you're...
They may have accounted for that. We don't know that they didn't.
It's like, the number is big regardless. So even if they're just counting adults as children, and even if they're including children, it's still a big-ass number.
Yeah. And despite the overall economic recovery, it's only a small improvement from 2014, going down by about 900,000 households. When people can't safely afford to pay their mortgages and rent, it isn't just a problem for those in a lower income or people who bid off more house than they can chew. Economic trickle down, housing unaffordability drags down the GDP, slowing down overall economic growth for everyone, said Dan McHugh, senior research associate at the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard University, which publishes the annual State of the Nation's Housing Report. It forces them to constrict spending on other items, which would reduce spending on other parts of the economy. They would buy less, save less, reduce savings. It may make it more difficult to venture out and start a new company or live in month to month. They're much less likely to go back to school, get additional training, and may not be in a job that makes them the most productive member of the labor market. A big factor of how wages haven't kept pace with the rising housing costs.
Nope.
Yep. So there's people that could afford a house. Nothing changed for them. They're still hardworking. They still have a job. They're still, responsible financially, but housing costs have gone up and your wages are stagnant. CEO's pays go up, but you know, everybody's more too mad about, they don't want minimum wage to go up, you know,
right, instead of demanding that they make more too.
Mm-hmm. Housing costs are being driven by a limited supply of move-in quality entry-level housing. In the wake of the financial crisis, so much capacity was taken offline, Swank told NBC News, Diane Swank, CEO of DS Economics. Much of the existing stock of housing is still underwater. Many of the entry-level houses are in disrepair. And what building is happening upmarket. Builders are less able to downscale and build in smaller volumes of smaller homes. It's restricting supply well below demand, so of course it shows up in price. That's the thing we see in Charlotte. Like, you look at the developments and it's mostly like those little lofts and the tight, mm-hmm. like those, like the gentrified areas of town is where you see all the construction. Like,
be so tiny, you be like, who the fuck wanna live here? But somebody does.
Yeah,
but
they're not building arm and a leg. Yeah, they're not building
homes.
Mm-hmm. Like, they're not building homes, they're building like places for, you know, up and coming business level, like white people that mm-hmm. can live in,
or a lot of town homes which don't take up as much space as a single unit home.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Customers allegedly attacked a McDonald's employee over broken ice cream machine. Yeah, it's hot out here, guys.
And the thing is so fucked up about McDonald's, they know they got these fuck whack ass machines,
mm-hmm.
but they not really trying to invest to correct this problem. And the way the machines is, they was like, hey, we used to close, but now we open 24 hours, so ain't no time to ever turn the fucking machine off and not function. But they're, I don't know what to tell them. I mean, I don't think an employer should get attacked over. I think all this responsibility falls back on McDonald's. Fix your fuck-ass machines. Everybody else's machines work every time I go there. I don't never go to Wendy's and they'd be like, you know what? Our machine don't work.
Yeah. Three irate customers allegedly attacked a McDonald's employee in Florida after finding out the ice cream machine was down for maintenance. An employee said that three females, including two teens, went through the drive-thru around 8 p.m. on Sunday and tried to order ice cream after being told the machine was out of service. They went inside the restaurant and saw another customer with ice cream.
Okay, that's probably why they got mad.
Well, people always say when they say it's down for maintenance, don't believe them because they just lying, trying to.
Because they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with the machine, or they just won't get, don't want to give you any.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I not saying it's right, but I understand. Sometimes you gotta. I understand.
I mean, ice cream, but I see somebody else walk at the front door with it. Mm-hmm. I can see them being mad about that.
Yeah, I. It's crazy to me too, guys. Right. After being told the machine was out of service, I mean, maybe that was the last one. Maybe it broke the second that they made that last ice cream cone.
Right. The customers don't know that. All they know is they see ice cream and they didn't get none.
Right. They saw somebody with ice cream. The group began arguing with the employee before jumping over the counter and attacking her. They hit the woman and pulled her hair. The employee was not seriously injured. Deputies have no suspects but are waiting for McDonald's to turn over surveillance video of the incident. Damn.
For the soon, McDonald's gonna be like the bank. You know how you go in the bank, they have like them plexiglass bulletproof windows.
For $7.50 an hour.
Nigga, for $7.50 an hour, $3.50 once they tax your ass to death. Fuck that.
Yep. Anger. As Twitter celebrates Malia Obama Day instead of Independence Day on July 4th. Now, I don't know why this is only being printed July 8th.
Slow on the uptick,
Yeah, apparently that's the first daughter's birthday.
Right.
So, Chance the Rapper sent out a tweet that received more than 289,000 likes. Basically, yeah, like, I don't see what the problem is.
Me either.
She
just happened to be born on the same day.
Yeah.
Thank you for celebrating both. What the fuck is wrong with people?
He said, Happy Malia Obama Day.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently people got very upset by this. Instead of,
the white people who come and just think this country's just the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And if you criticize or have a problem with anything that anybody ever does, also you unpatriotic.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna start saying this. I like this because it's a positive thing rather than all the negative ass, like, I'm so woke, people were never free.
That
like
on my nerves too,
that man. Yeah, because it's like, hey, you still dragging me down. I got the day off and I do want a hot dog. But if I say Happy Malia Obama Day, now I'm celebrating something positive while also saying, you know, like, Independence Day is complicated and not something I really want to participate in. Yeah, I'm a fan of this. Good job, internet. Let's see what else happened. Apparently there was a woman breastfeeding during sex and the internet lost its motherfucking mind. Mm-hmm.
Was it film, tape, photo? I don't understand.
YouTube vlogger has defended herself against critics who attacked her for admitting to breastfeeding her baby while having sex. Well, listen, if a YouTube blogger brought it up, then we must talk about it. It's extremely important and clearly a scourge going across the globe. I mean, it must be so many people that are participating in this culture from this YouTube vlogger. Tasha Maile, M-A-I-L-E, maybe Maile, is a vegan. Okay, that explains a lot. Spiritual mama, who has been a positive voice speaking out against stigmatizing breastfeeding and trying to normalize the act for moms everywhere. Okay. I mean, a lot of us support that. Like, just cause somebody's breastfeeding doesn't mean, you know, they trying to fuck you or whatever. Women is natural and, you know, we have to stop looking at women as just sex objects and stuff. So, okay, I understand that. All right, cool. But though she's often been praised for her encouraging stance on her YouTube, one of her YouTube clips has drawn criticisms from other parents. In the short video, she mentioned that she has, she had lots of people ask her about breastfeeding while being intimate and went on to reveal that she had tried it once. Cue uproar. Soul Almost 3, still strong at breastfeeding. So she has like a picture of a kid breastfeeding or whatever. Did you know a child's immune system is immature till 6 years or so? The human body expects milk until at least 7. When did drinking milk from a cow become a thing? Not only that, but adults still breastfeeding from a cow. And did you ever see a label that says hormone free? What an oxymoron. Milk is hormonal fluid. I know the only hormonal fluid I consciously want is what that of my mother's, and that ship has sailed a long time ago. As for my littles, doing the best I can to keep them healthy, wealthy, and wise. The touch, smell, skin to skin, love, nutrition, bond with a mother is no joke. Nature has us perfectly designed. It's the interventions and interference that puts things out of alignment. Hashtag follow your heart. It's the only real voice you'll ever truly have. That was one of her posts. All right. She said, breastfeeding your children is great. Sex is also great. Having sex while your child is nursing is fucking creepy. Oh wait, no, that's one of the users that said that. They wrote in the comment section, I don't care what anyone says, how can you be turned on when your child is nursing? I agree with her that sex is important and natural, but come on, not while you are feeding your baby. Wait a few minutes. Where's your mind exactly when you're having intercourse and breastfeeding at the same time? Another woman asked. I wouldn't want my children to be watching me and my husband make love. That's extremely personal, another commentator wrote.
Go ahead.
What?
No. And my thing is this. She shared this, and now I think a lot of people, in my opinion, just like to judge other parents, period. Anything that anybody else does that you're not doing, or you think is weird, or you think is wrong, or you think is creepy, other parents judge them, even if they've done this shit themselves. It's a lot of parents that have fucked around infants. I'm just keeping this real, you know.
Okay,
but,
well, you keeping it real, I got you.
But, you know, people have a tendency to want to shame people that are very open and very public about this. Now, I understand when you make things public, you leave it open to public opinion. But my thing is, her doing this, is it really affecting your life? Is it in any way, shape, form, or fashion other than you using this as a way to shame her? Because all the shame is coming on her. That anybody was like, what is he doing there too? You know, like I try, it's like, to me, all the focus is, and this is another way to shame women. You already shame her for breastfeeding, you're probably shaming her for fucking, and at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you know, she wasn't fucking herself, there was a dude here too, but all of a sudden all the critique is on her.
Well, she's the vlogger, so that's why it's on her too.
Okay, and that makes sense.
You know, it's
also
not like if he came up there, I can't even imagine if some man had a video talking about some, yeah, you can fuck your wife while she breastfeeding. That shit would not go down well. People would be like, is she consenting to this? Well, so you can't wait? What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, I don't think in this situation, I don't think this coming from a man would make it any better.
Yeah, people just like to criticize parents.
Well, I do think that's true too. You know, I think, you know what though, the way I feel about this shit is the way I feel about a lot of stuff. In your relationship, what y'all decide to do is y'all's business. Mm-hmm. But once you tell everybody, you kind of make it everybody's business, and that's when people start coming in with the judgment, because they start thinking about themselves and what they would allow and what they wouldn't allow, you know. But like, for the most part, she's talking about breastfeeding up to 7 years old. There's a lot of people that are like, I wouldn't allow my kid at 7 to fucking breastfeed for me. That's crazy.
Right.
You know what I mean? But they agree that breastfeeding shouldn't be stigmatized, blah, blah, blah. But everybody has their own line.
Right.
And this is what you happen. You combine sex and breastfeeding, you're going to have motherfuckers getting all up in their feelings because, you know, people are going to be like, this is child abuse. This is, pedophilia type shit, even if it's technically not, they feel a certain way. That's all it takes. She responded to her critics. She says, first of all, you should actually listen to the video. It's talking about how my 3-month-old would not allow me to put him down at all. She says, he was attaching me 24/7. He was also using me as a dummy at night. I don't know what that means. Tasha goes on to clarify that the baby was very much asleep at the time and unaware of what was going on. We did it while he was sleeping next to me or on me. It had nothing to do with my child. My child was not in the act of what we were doing. He was not involved. He was there sleeping.
Oh, pacifier.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah,
so he was even used her as a pacifier at night.
Yeah.
Sex is a beautiful thing. We are all feeling beings. We love sex. And after posting the second video, many fans are quick to step in and defend her breastfeeding while I have a sex stance. I breastfed my daughter while having sex when she was younger. She was stuck to me like glue. And after having a new baby, sex was the only thing keeping my sanity. So yes, I had sex while nursing at night, one woman wrote. My first son was the same way when I was breastfeeding. It happens. That's when a baby needs his mama, and our babies are used to hearing our hearts beating. Some people's minds are just not in the right spot, agreed another. I think everyone holds a sleeping baby while doing things that's impossible not to. Hey, when you have kids, you just gotta do whatever works, another fan added. All right. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't have a kid, and I've never breastfed. I've never had sex with a woman while breastfeeding. I feel like
I'm not the demographic.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm not the person to.
But I'm not judging you either.
Well, the other part of this is I'm gonna do something that, you know, rarely happens on the internet these days, but it's totally possible. I don't really care.
Okay, that's, I didn't want to be like that either. But I was like, who gives a fuck? She's a vlogger. They posted something, and all of a sudden, everybody and their mama is goddamn talking about it. And you're like, word?
Yeah, I don't have to care about this shit. I don't care. It's one person's thing that they do in private. I don't care. I don't know if it's, if she's a great mom or a bad mom. I can't tell from this, and I don't know.
Yeah, and a lot of it boils down to some of the shit we talked about before. How people can't talk about shit they really angry about, so they go around and talk about other shit to divert the fact that they don't know if they're gonna have health care, they don't know if they're gonna keep their job, the economy is fucked up. So instead of talking about that shit they can't change, they turn around, they divert it to other shit that in the scheme of life, this shit don't matter.
Yeah, if y'all do this, y'all do this. I don't know. I don't have anything to say about it. It's just, like, it's not like they touching the child or some shit. Right. It's not, I mean, I don't know. It's just, people get really passionate over shit like this that I'm just like, it's, certain shit is just a Facebook meme. You know, I think I was saying this to Chris yesterday. I did so much podcasting, y'all. I can't keep up. But, certain shit is a Facebook meme. And there's certain discussions I don't want to have based on what it started off of.
Right.
Like, I'm not having the fucking breastfeeding during sex conversation off of this shit. It's ridiculous. People gonna fall out, they gonna do all this shit, all these histrionics over some shit that ultimately don't fucking matter.
Right.
Cause only two consenting people can figure this out between them. And I don't know all the ugliness of fucking having a kid. I understand that it's fucking arduous and it ain't pretty. It's why I always say parenting for the internet gonna get your ass caught up.
Cause
cause even a good parent, there's certain shit, if you put it on the internet, people don't want to see. Even if they agree with it, they don't want to see it. I understand sometimes a kid has to be disciplined. You have to put them in timeout. If you put the shit on a fucking video, I'm gonna be like, I feel bad for that kid. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, dog. You shouldn't have told me. Like, now I guess it seems like I'm not for punishing kids, but I am. I understand. But when I see it, I still feel bad for that motherfucking kid, right? That's how everybody is.
But I always feel bad for the children, though.
Right, but I mean, even stuff like a kid fucks his hair up when his dad says, don't cut your hair, and the kid's like, I cut my hair anyway, and he fucks his hair up. I feel bad for that kid. Right? Even if the parents did nothing, if the parents just say, well, now you gotta walk around school with your hair fucked up, and I'm not gonna fix it. I'm like, fix his hair, man, come on. But that's not, and I'm not saying, like, I'm not calling that person a bad parent, because right, that kid will learn a lesson from the fact that you didn't fix his hair and this nigga had to go to school looking stupid one day. He'll be like, next time my daddy say
he
gonna cut my hair, I'm gonna wait for him to cut my hair.
Right.
That's, you know, that's a lesson my brother had to get. It's, we laugh about it now, but if you put it on the internet, nigga, that's child abuse. Like, as far as I'm concerned, when I'm watching it, thumbs down, bad, no. It's sad, you know, because I feel bad and awkward for the kid. Well, I feel like everything is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain shit that just, I don't, and like you said, I don't know if it's just people are angry about other shit, mm-hmm, or they want to exert some type of control, or maybe they just like to fight. But, yes, but like when you see like a Facebook meme, it's like, fellas, would you let your girl wear this outside? And it's like a woman in a fucking floss bikini with nipple pasties on. And it's like, would you let her meet your mama? Would you let your girl wear this to meet your mama? And you know niggas gonna argue. Right, thoughts. You know niggas gonna argue. That's the whole point of it. And I feel like people are being suckers by getting suckered into arguing over that bullshit.
Come on.
It's like, I won't participate, dog. I'm sorry. It's ridiculous. It's like, unless it's some jokes or some shit, I have nothing to add to this conversation because it's ridiculous. It will never ever affect me ever. There's never going to be a time that it'll affect me. So that's it. You know what I mean? Like I saw people with this woman. Oh, so he can't wait to have sex? I don't even know. She could have been the one talking about, I'm trying to fuck.
She could have done right.
I don't know. I don't live in these people's house and I don't give a fuck. This they fault for telling me. I don't give a fuck. Like, if she told me this to my face, I'd be like, I'm going to be real with you, dog. I don't know shit about raising no motherfucking kids. Don't know breastfeeding.
Nope.
More power to you. It'll never come up in my house. I'm sorry. You know, so yeah, I don't understand. I bet you there's a lot of other ugly shit, quote unquote, that doesn't look good, that goes down in people's lives.
Of course. That
honestly, most of us have dealt with, but we just keep that shit we just don't tell everybody our business.
Mm-hmm.
It's like probably everybody in the world has probably shit they pants once as a grown ass adult, but ain't nobody telling you. We're not writing the shit my pants stories every day.
Come on.
Cause everybody's like, you take that shit to your grave. It's not something, like, I'm not trying to normalize that. I'm not trying to fight the cause. She's made it so that she wants to normalize breastfeeding.
Right.
So this is literally her cause.
Right.
So she got to go take these slings and arrows. But end of the day, I don't think this says anything about anybody. Like, I don't know. She might still be a great mom and he might be a great husband. I don't know. I don't know the rules for this shit. So anyway. You know, and I would extend that to other shit. Like, this, we not going to talk about Black China and Rob Kardashian on this show.
Mm-mm.
Like, at least not in any way that's, let's have a profound discussion about the sexual violence of revenge porn. Nigga, revenge porn is wrong. We all know that. I'm not about to have that argument based off of a fucked up toxic relationship. They not a good basis to have this. I'm not going to talk about Black fatherhood based off of LeVar Ball. Like, certain conversations, I'm like, it's a non-starter because the people that are going through this shit are like a walking intersection of fucked up Facebook meme ideals. So people just latch on to what they want to and get super passionate. And it's like, none of this shit was that important. So anyway, more power to you. Good luck with your vlogging. This is a ridiculous one. There's an Ohio sheriff that refuses to let his deputies carry overdose antidote medicine, despite Ohio being the hardest hit by the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. And he basically just says, like, I don't do Narcan. He told the Cincinnati Inquirer they never carried it, nor will they. That's my stance. He insists he's not heartless, but the cost of repeatedly administrating Narcan sucking the taxpayers dry. So basically, it costs too much money to revive these people in there. They're just ODing on this drugs, and he's essentially saying he gotta let them die. Because, you know, even if you bring them back, they're just gonna do more drugs.
But do they have programs that actually are gonna help people and help rehabilitate these people? Like, that's the thing. You don't have programs to help the people. They goddamn want to cut every fucking service that would be available to the people to help them change their lives. And then you go, well, if you OD, fuck it. We're not trying to help you there either.
One person we know has been revived 20 times. All we're doing is reviving them, not curing them. We don't go there. And he says, we don't go there and let people die. Here in Ohio, the live squads, paramedics, get in there about the same time and they're more equipped to use Narcan, I guess. The people who use the drugs don't usually like the police and they turn violent once they're revived. Some police departments that use Narcan won't even allow police to use it unless there are two officers on the scene. The police feel unsafe using this Narcan because they have to get down on their knees, squirt it into their nose, and the people who are saving are not happy to see them. They're angry as hell. I wonder if that's true. Because it's losing a lot of, like, stuff they don't have statistics or evidence on. He's just kind of, like, anecdotally been, one guy's been 20 times, and, you know, when they wake up, they be mad. You know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are white people, which they don't want to talk about either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of these Trump supporters, a lot of their children are on drugs. And President Obama had a lot of programs put in place to help people on drugs. which, you know, affects brown people at a higher rate, but you white people actually get the benefit of these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then you also talk about how they were actually loosening up the laws because, you know, white folks on drugs now, so when there's crack epidemic, nobody gave a fuck. But anyway.
It's interesting because he's basically writing them off.
Right.
So I guess he's gotten to the point where he's like, I don't give a fuck what race you are. I ain't waking your ass up.
And eventually that's what it gets down to. Mm-hmm. So that's why at the end of the day, you have to be aware of who you put in office, because these policies and procedures do affect you, particularly if you are the middle to lower class. There are a lot of white people that are in the goddamn lower class that don't want to admit they're in the lower class, or they keep hanging on a dream that one day they might get out of lower class, when that shit will never happen in their lifetime.
My main problem with all this is I just think he's lying.
I do too.
I don't think they get violent when they wake up. I think he's lying. I think
they just don't want
to
do it.
He just don't want to do it. And I think also this relates to the fact that white, black, indifferent, whatever race, we see drug use as a character flaw, and we see drug users as less than, so therefore we're shitting on them for being drug users. And the fact that they overdose or whatever is kind of like, well, yeah, that's what you deserve. You should die for doing these drugs because you're not a contributing quote-unquote member of society, so you can go. That's my guess.
Yes, it's a lot of stigma that comes with that. And like I said before, I continue to say this, people have a tendency to point at people when they can see their flaws. When everybody has flaws, some of your flaws are invisible. But, you know, the drug addict, the alcoholic, you know, the prostitute, these are quote-unquote things that you can see. But, you know, things that you can't see is what people don't want to talk about. But those are flaws, too.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some other segments. Let's maybe do some fucking with black people. I should probably bring up that list. Let's do some fucking with black people, everybody. I think you guys love that game. We all hate that game. Everybody knows that. All right, here we go. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. Time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game where we go all around the globe, we find different articles and make us feel fucked with as black people. We assign point scores of 0 to 100 and intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What should we start? Where should we start? There's so many... so much fucking to get to, guys, isn't it always too much fucking? Here's one. It's kind of black people adjacent, but we'll talk about it anyway.
Okay.
I'm tired of watching brown men fall in love with white women on screen. This is by Aditi Natasha Kinney, who writes this for Jezebel. The Big Sick, it's a movie, has been roundly lauded in the press, including here at Jezebel, and not without good reason. It's funny, heartwarming love story based on the true life experiences of co-writers and married couple Kamal Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon. But as much as I liked it, and I did, I also found myself exhausted yet again by the on-screen depiction of a brown man wanting to date a white woman, while brown women are portrayed alternatively as caricatures, stereotypes, inconsequential, and or the butts of a joke. I know, isn't it progress to see Asian men get the girl for once, instead of standing as a prop, token, or a joke? Sure, it's great that Hollywood is putting its money behind narratives with brown men at the helm, as in The Big Sick and Master of None, but both are also center white women as the love interest, a concept which, in the complex hierarchy of power and race in America, pays lip service to one notion that has shaped the history of South Asian and American culture alike: whiteness as the ultimate desire, the highest goal in defining oneself as American. Both of these works are part of a larger trend that's common in films and media portrayal of the Desi community, that the pursuit of white love is a mode of acceptance into American culture and a way of transcending the confines of an immigrant culture. The notion that white love is a gateway drug to the American dream. John Cho recognized this trend last March in a conversation with Kumail Nanjiani at Sundance. Cho noted that while he gets a lot of attaboys from people excited to see an Asian guy with a white woman, particularly other Asian guys, they don't seem to want two Asian people on the screen together. The screen might set on fire, he said. Nanjiani sidestepped this critique by noting the Big Six depiction of his brother in a happy relationship with a Pakistani woman satisfies these those optics. On-screen Asian men have been depicted coveting or romancing white women through the ages, from the 1915 silent film The Cheat to the modern examples of Raj in The Big Bang Theory, Gogol in the namesake, Ravi in Meet the Patels, Tom Haverford in Parks and Recreation, and Dev Shah in Master of None. It seems that directors and writers have sought to solve a lack of Asian representation on screen by casting Asian men opposite of white women, but that tack almost inevitably erases interracial relationships between people of color. But yeah, that's true. I remember one of the things I liked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was when Melinda May was dating was married to Andrew, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was like Blair Underwood is in this relationship with what is her name, it's an Asian person and a black person.
Yeah, with May.
And
yeah,
they're together, and it's kind of like, huh, you don't see that often.
Mm-mm.
You know, you normally don't see, like, if there's an interracial relationship, it's normally like white and something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I did notice it, you know. One of the things I'll say about this article, because I saw people pushing back against it, the first thing I'll say is she liked the film. I think that matters, because I think what happens a lot of times, if you critique something that you like, people start losing focus and be like, you just hate everything, you don't want nobody to do this. Two, I completely understand the defensiveness that an Asian man would have to this, which is, so damn, I can't tell my story. Like, I get it, I get this thing, it's my job, it's my movie, it's my art, and I have to be obligated to tell a story that's not my story. This didn't really happen. I gotta fucking invent some characters and shit. Here's my thing. It's never really your story. Like, it's a movie, it's a project. You're always taking some creative license. The same system that works for them picking a brown man to even get in the door and tell his story, I feel like you have to trickle that shit down in your project. That should be the same fucking mentality you have about making sure, because see, everybody looks at this shit as art and personal and telling stories. That's part of it, but we're also talking about money, and that's the part that always gets lost in this shit. We're also talking about the idea that there's some actress out there that's worked all her fucking life to tell her story the same way you did, and then you get on screen and you're like, I'm not gonna get that actress a chance. Well, I'll give that actress a role, but it's gonna be, like you said, as my brother's wife on the show who doesn't have a lot of lines and isn't really in the movie that much or whatever. You know, it's like, it's always some type of, you know, conceit that has to be made. And I find that interesting, because if you make that choice, then you have to be willing to stand up to that criticism, because you know you're gonna get that criticism. And it sounds like, and I think this happens with a lot of people, they just kind of assume that, like, Asian people are just like, they don't give a fuck about this stuff. They care too.
Yeah, they do.
You know, I know people that don't fuck with Mindy Kaling because they're like, all her, like, I know, it's ironic. I know Asian men that have a problem with Mindy Kaling being like, most of her love interests are white on TV. And they're like, typical, this is the problem with da 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 da. But then they would defend this because this isn't about them.
Right.
You know, this is now their turn, and it's like, now I'm gonna do it wrong, quote unquote. So those are the things that I see coming up through this. As a black man, I know I notice every movie that has a black dude and a white woman as the main characters, and they go out of the way to make sure that it's not a sexual relationship.
Come on.
You know, and I'm not even saying because I covet white women or some shit. I'm literally just saying it's always awkward because any other movie with two reasonably attractive lead stars, the motherfuckers end up smashing. Every fucking movie is, you know, if it's Chris Pine and some white woman, they gonna fuck. If it's fucking, you know, Tom Cruise and some white woman, chances are it's gonna be some type of romantic shit happening. But when it's Denzel and some white woman, nigga, they are not about to do not a goddamn thing. Now, I know some people, you know, Denzel's kind of a weird example because I think I've heard that he don't want to do those that shit. But, you know, I remember watching Pelican Brief and being like, huh, that who wrote that? That's interesting. Like, I liked it. Like, I was like, oh, cool. A movie where the dude don't have to try to fuck the woman just because they together. But at the end, I'm like, oh, was that just because he's black? And y'all were like, we can't have him kissing no white woman. People going to get mad. You know, Will Smith did umpteen fucking movies until he got to the movie about being a thief, and him and Margot Robbie were lovers. Like, if I notice it and I don't really even care about it that much, you goddamn right a lot of these brown women notice this shit. You know what I mean? Especially when you don't have a large selection. So it's like, who are the brown people on TV getting to make shit? And in most cases, you know, you have Mindy Kaling, but then after that, it's mostly going to be men. And then just one by one, you can go through the line and be like, damn, this motherfucker got a white woman. This motherfucker picked a white woman. This motherfucker got a white actress. Like, everybody got a white actress getting this money. It's not like white actresses got a problem getting work. But so many brown women that can't get these jobs, and they kind of are looking for that opportunity. And yeah, they're going to be salty. And there's so many brown women that are fans who are being told, like, go support this dude. He's brown. You ain't watch this? You ain't watch this? Oh, you don't watch? Why are you not gonna watch this? And then they show up and it's like, I don't feel like I'm in this.
Right.
I feel like everybody else got a chance to be represented on screen, but I didn't get a chance. And I think that's it's a real feeling, and I think people shouldn't dismiss it. You know? Cause the art is out there anyway. It's not like it's gonna be changed, but maybe it'll reach one of these dudes in the next project. They won't do that. You never know. You know, I think a good example of this is Jordan Peele and Keegan Mike and Key, who both have white wives, I believe. But look at their projects and their own screen shit. They always pick black women as their love interest, even in them scenes on their fucking TV show. If it didn't call for, like, a white woman is the joke of part of this, it was always a black woman. It's a conscious choice. There's black actresses who got work because they got that call to be on that TV show. I mean, it's shit. The shit matters, you know, but people like to claim to be about that shit until it's them, you know. And I also think there's a reason certain people are getting the shows in the first place. It's because white people feel comfortable with the vision that you're going to put on the screen, because ultimately white people are the decision makers with all this shit. Mm-hmm. So if they say, look, we want to diversify our shit, let's go out and get this dude. We know that he'll also kind of bring some white people into this, and he'll tell a vision that we feel comfortable with. We don't want a TV show that's only brown people on it. Like, we don't want that show. We don't want that show about an Indian family that doesn't have any big major roles for white people in it. You know, we don't want Fresh Off the Boat. We don't want that kind of shit. So anyway, that's how I feel about it. And Karen's just, you good?
Yeah, I think for me, I understand what she's saying. And when I hear a lot of these articles, in my opinion, no matter how valid the points that she's making, a lot of it is a larger industry problem. Mm-hmm. like a lot of this goes back down to the root of racism, because racism is the root of a lot of the decisions and the decision makers and the choices that they make. And the thing is, you will have black families and people of colors, but it's like, y'all, we always got to be against each other because there's very few. Mm-hmm. You know, or either the audience is forced to support X, Y, and Z, even if it's not their thing or they don't like it. And it's like, well, at the end of the day, if you have more brown people here, the shit that you put out would not be critiqued because we would be watching our own shit.
Right.
You know, that's something they don't realize. You don't give a lot of options. So the option you put out there, people are hypercritical of, because they're like, hey, you're not representing me. Mm-hmm. And instead of you representing the people like you should, you halfway kind of sort of represent them, or either most of the time when it comes to diversity, even with brown people, diversity equals men. Diversity does never eat the diversity never is the women, you know, because like you say, only one woman, you know, but there's a lot of brown women from various different groups that could have their own TV shows, starring their own series, starring their own movies, you know, but a lot of times these women never get a chance, or they're overlooked unless they're proximity to whiteness, because there's a lot of white women that have had their own movies and shit like this and are very, very famous, you know, but they're living in whiteness. So there are a lot of do projects and fail and not succeed and shit like that. And when a lot of brown women, you don't even get the chance to even get through the door for the opportunity to fail.
Not to mention, a lot of times people fall back on that, well, this is my story. But what you put on the screen, we all know it's not your actual story. Like, this isn't a documentary. You took some liberties. Like, you might have a black friend, but he's not gonna be as cool as the comedian you hired to play your black friend. You know, you might have a white wife, she ain't gonna be a top 10 attractive white woman actress like the one you cast to play your wife. We know you're embellishing certain shit. If you write this narrative, and this, and like I said, it's, I'm not even saying this makes your film bad.
Right.
I'm just saying people going to notice. It feels like the new thing is to be mad at people for noticing shit. But that's just what it is. I noticed. I didn't like that aspect of it. I see a bigger trend about it, and that's it. And then people get mad about it. They're like, oh, I can't enjoy nothing. It's like, well, damn, dog. Am I not allowed to watch a video, be like, oh, this song is jamming, but kind of weird that there's no dark-skinned black women in this video, like, is like nobody can bring it up, like, it just, we gotta all just, because the other part with this woke shit and all this, like, these articles, the second that somebody don't bring something up, y'all always bring it back. They always bring it back. Oh, you didn't say nothing when blah blah blah. So it's like, but if I say something, you're gonna go, all you do is say this. It's like, ultimately I can't win for losing. But anyway, the point being, motherfuckers notice, dog, even when they have a good time. I'm black. I enjoy a lot of shit that I go, oh man, that was crazy, that was racist, and I just keep enjoying it anyway.
Me, you know? Too. It's a lot of shit that leaves a lot of brown women out of it, particularly black women out of it, and I enjoy it and I love it and I keep it pushing, but it does not mean that it's not a problem there. And I think a lot of times some people improve, some people don't, but the thing is, like everything else, you put it in the public and it's going to get critiqued, and people act like they are not ready for the critiques that come with the shit that you put out.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope this shit reaches back to these creators at some point, and maybe they can, instead of doubling down, like, think about it, because everybody always thinks about this from a personal perspective, and I'm like, fuck the personal perspective, because I understand it is personal to the author, to everybody. My thing is, from a business perspective, how are brown women ever supposed to get on? How are they supposed to get on? White people don't want to put them in the show. The men that get in the door first don't want to put them on the show. How do they get on? Everybody can't be Mindy Kaling. Everybody can't be Issa Rae. Like, the decision makers in this have to look out. And that means even when it's a black or brown decision maker, yes, your ass too.
Right, because, like, and you bring up a good point, like you said, when white males make the decision, a lot of times we erase. When white females make the decisions, we erase.
Mm-hmm.
When brown men make the decision, we erase. Well, it's like, well, goddamn, you know, and it's very, very, very few black women that are in a position of power and control to make the decisions where they can do the shit the way that they want to do it. And there are women, a lot of black and brown women in these industries, but because of the patriarchy and the racism in these industries, they never get a chance to get to the spot where they can start making the money and making the decisions.
Or when they get on and they say, well, all we got is us, people get mad at that.
Right.
Wow, really? You gonna act like nobody ever, like, nigga, the only people I see employing us is us. Like, like, what you want me to say? Because if it's, you know, if it's somebody else, you always got an excuse. You know, matter of fact, Atlanta's a good example of black dude in real life dating, or I think the mother of his child is a white woman, cast black actresses as his leads for all his shit. Like the work is the work. I don't give a fuck what your real life is, to be honest, but when you come to work and you like, I want to do this black ass show, how the fuck you gonna do this black ass show without black women? How you gonna do this brown show without brown women? How you gonna do, like, you can't make these compromises, but only for yourself, and then go fuck everybody else. You know, I can't believe y'all would do me like this, you know?
Right. And that right there, the problem for getting angry, for being fucking left out again.
Right. 0 to 100.
100.
Yeah, I give it 100 too. Speaking of being included, Sofia Coppola addresses the Beguiled's all-white cast controversy. Sofia Coppola's latest film, The Beguiled, has received a whirlwind of fanfare from its historic win, at Cannes, Bewitching Air, and slew of strong female performances from Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, and Elle Fanning. But, like any Hollywood figure in the spotlight, the director was also faced a few ways of criticism surrounding the thrilling Southern Gothic drama. Namely, the all-white casting, and the report that she asked her friend and star, Kirsten Dunst, to lose weight for the role. I like how those are both included in controversy, but okay. I feel, cause in my mind, I feel like that second one, the group of people that cared about Kristen Dunst losing weight don't give a fuck about them not having no black people. Mm-mm. So in a new interview with the UK stylist, Coppola took the opportunity to address those controversies head on. I left some things out from the original movie and book where they felt exploitative. Now keep in mind, this is a make of not just a book, but there was a movie that was made not too long ago, and there is a black woman role in the movie and in the book.
Okay. See,
and she is taking it out of her movie, the 2017 version. Mm, she
don't think nothing wrong with that.
She says of her decision to exclude the two black characters, sorry, those two, in 1966's Thomas Cullen novel, one of whom appeared in the 1971 adaptation, there was a very stereotypical sassy slave character that I didn't want to spotlight. I didn't want to talk about that aspect of the Civil War because it's such an important story to tell. She explained that although she understands the backlash, she made her choice out of deference to the story she wanted to tell in this particular movie and respect to the narrative she didn't have the time or desire to do justice to here. I want to focus on dynamics between male and female, not include racial politics. I didn't want to treat it lightly. I didn't want to take a token slave character without really going into the story of what that was like, and there wasn't room to tell that whole story, the director added. I don't want to represent an only white world, and it's something we talk about and are conscious of, but I also thought it wasn't nice for young women to see the only ethnic person in the film to be portrayed as a servant, even if that would be accurate. Coppola also responded to the reaction generated by this bit from her Variety cover story with Dunst. When Coppola suggested that Dunst lose some weight for her role in The Beguiled, the actress pushed back, but she said her director was very understanding. Coppola told stylists that comment was totally taken out of context. I don't remember how it was said, but I remember we talked about that role, and I maybe said, oh, it's the Civil War, so they all have to look like they don't have a lot, or something. She added, but I didn't tell her to lose weight. I've known Kirsten a long time. She was 16. She's like a sister to me, and I trust her so much. It wouldn't be the first time something the star said during the interview was lost in translation. Ha, that was editorialized. The thing I'll say about this shit is I feel the same way about the last article as this one. So when are black people supposed to get on? When is that? One, there's a black actress who didn't get a role. Two, when the fuck is black people supposed to get jobs? When are they supposed to get jobs in this town? Because if you follow her comments to the fullest extent, the only time black people should be on screen really if the story is about race. Like if the story has to be a black story. Otherwise, there's no fucking room for you. You and your racist shit. Y'all represent racism and racial problems. And I just don't want to address it because it's too important to tell. It reminds me of when that woman wrote that article we read on here about Ryan Coogler shouldn't take Black Panther. And I thought, you're out of your fucking mind, white woman, because she was trying to act like, I'm so woke that he shouldn't take it because it'll mess up his street cred as an indie director. And it's like, what are you talking about? Black directors basically gotta all not get the money and the power that white directors get. Like they gotta keep doing small films and quote unquote keep it real for you. Like get the fuck out of here. You know how you end up doing passion projects? Because you get money off of fucking Disney and then you can go do whatever the fuck you wanna do for your next project. His next project could be called Fuck White People and it'll get made because it'll be his money if he wants. And he'll have the cachet of a big budget movie behind him. Not to mention the skills you learn from directing big budget movies because you have more cash, you have more crew, you have more technical people. Those skills are skills that often black people don't get to learn.
Right.
You know, anyway, the point, and that's why Ava DuVernay hires all these black people on her shit too, because those are skills you can take somewhere with you, you know, opportunities they wouldn't have got otherwise in many cases, to showcase their excellence. All that being said, like, Coppola does something here that I think a lot of white people do, which is, I'm gonna just paint a white world. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna say it's because, look, I don't know enough about race and I don't want to offend anybody, but at the end of the day, you're having the same racial effect of an all-white cast that a openly racist director would have. I don't want no niggas on my set. You indirectly don't have no niggas on your set. What am I supposed to take from this? Also, I know deep down it's because you don't want these white women to look like, quote unquote, less than perfect. You don't want them to look bad. You don't want it to look like, and if any, like, to it won an award at Cannes, but I hope the same shit happens to this that happened with Birth of a Nation, where people go, yeah, I don't want to see this shit, you know what I mean? Where it's like, because a lot of times these shits win, these, they win awards at these festivals, but they're not necessarily the greatest movies. Mm-mm. But I bet white people were celebrating this, but that's because black people weren't there.
Come on.
You know what I mean? Black people would have been like, dog, this is whack. What the fuck are you doing? How you gonna have a main, how you gonna have a character, a supporting character that's a black woman in this film that supposedly has like one of the best lines talking about how they was racist and shit to these white women? Like, that's one of the memorable lines. You took it out. So now you don't have to worry about that. These white women never look bad. No one ever brings up that these are slave owning white women. No one ever brings up that this takes place in the South that's right after the Civil War. The fuck was the Civil War about? You sound just like the people that go, it's heritage, not hate, when they talk about the fucking Confederate flag, but they won't tell you it's a heritage of owning slaves. It's that shit. You know? Like, it's just such a fail.
Yeah, and it's one of the things where I'm sick and tired of people that don't know anything about quote unquote fucking diversity, but then you don't want to fucking learn, because at any time, another job, you could have hired a brown person and said, hey, I want to put this in my movie. I don't know how to do it. Can't, cause I guarantee you somebody in the industry is well known for helping directors diverse. They're fucking my job. You hire me when you want diverse characters on your set. I guarantee you it's somebody out there. This is all they fucking do across Hollywood. You could have hired somebody and was like, hey, I don't know how to do this. Can you come and help me? Who is a good actor or actress for this role? Yeah, 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 yeah. You didn't want to fucking learn. I'm tired of the goddamn excuses. Why is it that black people have to diversify their shit, but white people never have to diversify their shit? We always got to think about everything else. We always got to think about white tears. We always got to think about white feelings. We always got to think about how we portrayed. We always got to think about y'all fucking protesting. But when it comes to shit you made, who gives a goddamn fuck about how we feel? Your shit was in the goddamn Civil War. There were black people there. There were black people there. So it makes no sense to have a movie focused in the Civil War with no goddamn brown people whatsoever. That's stupid.
Right. And think about it. We're coming from just reading the article where it was like, this is why I want to have this white person in my movie as a love interest. It's my story to tell, and I'm going to put these white people in it. I'm going to put this white woman in it. And then you have this opposite thing where it's like, okay, the reality is there was a black person in this movie and I'm taking her out. Think about that. Think about how those two puzzle pieces fit together. This is like the perfect example of two stories that go together, because it's like, ultimately, who pays the cost? Some brown or black woman doesn't get the role, and it's like, when do they ever get a turn?
And the thing is fucked up about it is that in a lot of these movies and shit like this, these are just the brown straight women. Lord knows you don't want to get to the LGBTQ women whose roles are even less. A lot of times, I guarantee you, there's shit that's written with them in it that people just erase and don't cover and don't talk about. Even straight people get in these places, even minority people in these groups, and be like, you know what? Nah, I'm going to erase that. Think about, what was it? The one with the bar, the gay bar where they,
Stonewall,
right? Even with Stonewall, which is a gay, which is 100% gay, like we're talking about the quote, the gay movement, okay? Mm. And you say, you know what, even though brown people is really the focus of this and how a lot of this shit got jumped off, let's raise all the brown people that was here and make them white, and then you wonder why your shit flopped.
Right. All right, let me move to the next segment. But 100?
Yes.
All right, we're coming right back on screen, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's ridiculous, man.
Right, because the thing is, diversity sells. Brown people sell. But everybody like they fucking shocked and surprised every time brown people sell. But you don't ever want to give us a fucking chance. And then everybody asks, I'm so fucking tired of people acting shocked and surprised every time a brown movie makes money. Fuck you.
Well, the thing is, though, when's the last time anybody gave a interview where they were like, well, I didn't put any white people in this movie because I just don't see white people as being important to this story.
Come on.
Like, when's the last time you heard that quote, you know? Like, I remember watching Atlanta, and that's one of the things I love about Atlanta so much. Is this is the vision of the world where it's just like, white people don't really fucking matter, which a lot of black people have in our lives, where it's like, white people aren't always a part of everything that happens in our community. So why the fuck do we always have to write these roles for them, you know?
Right.
But it's that kind of thing. That's one of the reasons so many black people loved Atlanta, because it felt so black. And it wasn't like trying to. It just felt like, yeah, this is authentic, you know?
Yeah, and the truth be told, too, it's a lot of black people that purposely go out of their way not to fuck with white people. They're like, I gotta fuck with them niggas at work. I gotta fuck with them niggas in, you know, certain situations, you know, when I'm out in public. But when I'm in my space, my area, I want to deal with my people. I don't want to be in spaces where I'm constantly judged, constantly critiqued, can't be myself, where I constantly have to fucking code switch. White people don't have to code switch about a goddamn thing.
Right. Prosecutor was shocked by mistrial for cop who killed black man. An Oklahoma prosecutor said Saturday that he was shocked when a judge declared a mistrial in the case of a white former Tulsa police officer who fatally shot his daughter's black boyfriend because jurors had deliberated it for only a few hours. It was the third mistrial in 9 months for the former Tulsa police officer Shannon Kepler, and all the trials have been overseen by District Judge Sharon Holmes. Kepler doesn't deny shooting 19-year-old Jeremy Lake, but claims he was acting in self-defense. Kepler testified that Lake was armed, although police didn't find a weapon on Lake or at the scene. The shooting happened shortly after Lake had started dating Kepler's then 18-year-old daughter, Lisa. Attorney said the jurors deliberated for just 2 or 3 hours on Friday, before saying they were deadlocked 6 to 6. Holmes reminded jurors that the trial had started June 27th and asked whether they had changed their minds. When they said no, the judge declared a mistrial.
That's not a long period of time. A lot of times, I guess depending on the judge, they'll make them go back for sometimes for days and weeks before they,
I don't know. Trial. You know what? I don't know all this. And it varies. Because 6 to 6. Maybe that's different. I don't know.
Because okay, it only takes one. I see one. What you're saying. Six
so maybe seven. When it's 10 to 1, 11 to 1, I mean, 10 to 2 or 11
right,
to 1.
Right, like, y'all so close, yeah, right?
Yeah, maybe that's different. 6 to 6 is like, fuck. I had never experienced that procedure before in my life, Tulsa District Attorney Steve Kunzweiler said, noting that judges often tell juries to continue deliberating to try to reach a unanimous verdict in such circumstances. I was just hopeful that the court would, I mean, also it was after two other mistrials. I was hopeful that the court would have followed prior procedure and had a jury deliberate more. The judge had told the previous juries in the case that to continue deliberating after jurors reportedly were deadlocked. In one case, the judge waited till 2:30 a.m. before declaring a mistrial when jurors reported they could not break their deadlock. She did not immediately return a message that was left at her office on Saturday. Defense attorney Richard O'Carroll said the procedure was not unusual, but that the prosecution's case, not the jury, was to blame for the mistrial. It's frankly bad manners to blame the jury. This thing has been sensationalized since the very beginning. Kunzweiler said he will reevaluate the case and decide before August 1st status conference whether to try Kepler for a fourth time. Among the factors that Kunzweiler said he will consider are the prosecution and the police resources required to bring Kepler to trial again. There's a great amount of time and effort that goes into prosecution of these cases. O'Carroll said that it would be inappropriate to bring Kepler to a trial for the fourth time. I don't know. Unlike the previous two trials, Holmes had instructed jurors that they could convict Kepler of first degree murder or the lesser charge of manslaughter. So I guess in the past it was like, well, y'all trying to get him for murder and we don't know that it's murder. Like, so we're not convicting him of murder, but manslaughter, you know, you didn't plan to kill him, but you did. We might can convict him of that. So let's allow you to consider both. And that carries 4 years to life in prison for the citizen. Kunzweiler said, it was unclear whether the jury's deadlock was 6 for conviction or 6 for acquittal or 6 for murder and 6 for the lesser charge of manslaughter. Although previous juries could not agree on the murder charge, jurors in this first trial convicted Kepler of recklessly using his firearm. In his first trial, I mean. Kepler, who retired from the force after he was charged, was a 24-year police veteran who said he was trying to protect his daughter who had run away from home and he was living in a crime-ridden neighborhood. So he basically went to go get his daughter from this dude. From this black dude's house. O'Carroll said Lisa had been in and out of a homeless shelter after her father prohibited her from bringing men into his house. Juries in Kepler's previous two trials in November and February deadlocked 11-1 and 10-2 in favor of guilt before Holmes declared mistrials after up to 12 hours of deliberation in each case. Only takes one. We spent 2 weeks on this. I certainly recognize that people may have different interpretations on evidence. The goal of the system is not to have a hung jury, Kunzweiler said. Yeah, it was pretty much impossible to convict a police officer of killing a black person. Pretty much impossible. 0 to 100.
Oh, 100.
Yeah, I gotta give it 100 myself. Gotta give it 100 as well. All right, let's try to move into some lighter news. Try to do some white people news, maybe. Mm-hmm. Lighten this up. Let's see, how about this? Oh, let me put it on screen, that would help, right? I know you guys want to see these cover songs, you know, now that I did a poll and I know exactly which one of y'all are lying, pretending that y'all not down.
Every vote counts. Y'all should pay attention to the polls and vote it.
Mm-hmm. Like, y'all stay home and didn't vote for Hillary, and then y'all stay home and didn't vote against these acoustic covers. So, I mean, that's on y'all. Y'all not gonna trick me into feeling bad. Mm-mm. For doing what y'all need.
We gave the people what they wanted for the people that voted.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why is this taking so long? Oh, is it showing? Okay, it's showing.
Okay, showing now.
All right. And, how do I make this bigger? Here. Okay. All right. Whenever you're ready, YouTube. There we go.
Said that I'm a ride from the motherfucking niggas. Most likely I'ma die with my finger on the trigger. I'm riding outside all day with my niggas. My nigga.
A country song, didn't we?
I like how the camera is moving, which means another person is in his life that let him do this. Like, this isn't him by himself.
Mm-mm.
First things first, I love all my niggas. This rap shit crack, I involve my niggas. Looking for some lead, let me call my nigga. You sell it for the high, I need all my niggas. Some niggas smoke, smoke, some niggas drink, drink. Got niggas on the block, but they're glad they don't think. That's a nigga back up, me in the bucket locked up. I got that agar ride if you niggas wanna act up. You talking like a snitch, no that ain't my nigga. You tripping off a bitch, no that ain't my nigga. Known him since I was 8, yeah that's my nigga. Fuck my first bitch, pass her to my nigga. Hit my first lick pass with my nigga. Fuck the mother niggas, yeah I'm down for my niggas. Set a ride for my niggas, man. Fuck the mother niggas. Set a ride for my motherfucking niggas. Most likely I'ma die with my finger on the trigger. Grinding outside all day with my niggas. And I ain't going in unless you with my niggas. My nigga, my nigga. My nigga, my nigga. My motherfucking niggas. My nigga, my nigga. You know I'm down with them niggers down two words for your love and loyalty. Me and my nigga tripping on a Halloween. We used to hit the wall about every DC. Me and my down ass niggas getting twisted. Maybe get the trip and knock that gravy out your biscuit. Jay, know I fuck with you the long way, my nigga. So when I see you, I'm like, hey, my nigga. Try to act right by the case, my niggas. Drink that act right and get straight with my niggas. Me and my nigga riding dirty, trying to chase them figures. Got the YOLO, who got YOLO, don't matter, go figure. Set a ride for my motherfucking niggas. Most likely I'ma die with my finger on the trigger. Been grinding outside all day with my niggas. And I ain't going in unless it with my niggas. My nigga, my nigga. My nigga, my nigga. My motherfucking niggas. My nigga, my nigga. My nigga sell cake, my nigga got away. My nigga fronted me, he's the reason I'm straight. My nigga got a home, my nigga got a lady. My nigga we eat, my nigga get late. I'm still hitting licks, my nigga, my nigga. Not the nigga shit, my nigga, my nigga.
That R on the end of nigga is just killing me. It's, you gotta, that's basic cover song 101, my man. You gotta learn to say, nigga. Come on, man. That's, it's not even my fault. That's on you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I mean, you probably read the lyrics too. You know it got an A on it.
Mm-hmm. My nigga, my nigga.
Mm-hmm. Nigga.
Put his finger on the trigger, my nigga. Nigga. My nigga. South Park will ignore Trump. That's why we gotta talk about that Charles Man first. South Park will ignore Trump, which is funny because the whole last season was about Trump versus Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. But apparently they're done with the jokes. I don't know.
I don't blame them.
Which is funny. Maybe they don't feel as funny about this shit as it was a big joke to white people last year.
Right.
You know, it's one of the reasons I get it's comedians' job to make this shit funny, but I haven't watched any of the Saturday Night Live shit with Trump. I don't find it funny. I don't know. Feel like something's broken in me when it comes to this shit. Cause normally I laugh at pretty much anything. Everything. This is just something that I'm having a hard time. It's been months now.
Yeah, I just get infuriated. So I just, nope.
Yeah, I see people, he does some stupid shit and they make a gif of it, or they put the video on Twitter and everybody makes jokes, or he tweets something dumb and everybody likes to retweet and make a comment, and I'm just like,
I tap out.
None of this shit is helping. Like,
man, I don't think it's funny.
Maybe mocking him will do something to him mentally, but I just don't see any of this shit helping. He doesn't seem to care. He's a sociopath and a psychopath, and he's doing a bunch of unprecedented shit. He let his daughter stand in for him at the G20 summit.
And now it's like G19.
Yeah. Like, you let that happen. Like, that's so unpresidential.
And it would not be acceptable under
any other president. It's a lot. It makes us a laughing stock of the world. Not that I'm that attached to how America's viewed in the world like that, but still, it's just it's more like the unmitigated gall of how, ridiculous, this shit is. And ultimately, I feel like him and his administration has hurt the country in a lot of ways that people won't ever reconcile with until much later. Like,
yeah, and
just the idea of moving backwards from all the progress that people were having, I think a lot of people are gonna really regret the way that this last election went down.
Mm-hmm. I will say this now, but continue to say this on the low, the shit that he's doing right now, his administration is putting forward, it would be years and decades before we actually get the true effect of it and we actually begin to see. And the only reason why the economy is in the shape that it is now and shit like that is because, truth be told, we're still riding on the wave of a lot of shit that Obama did. Like, a lot of people haven't realized a lot of shit that Obama did flowed past him leaving office. Right. So we're still riding a lot of that wave. Within the next 6 months to a year to 2 years, we'll start seeing the shit that he's implementing come into play, and it's gonna be a big change in this country that I don't think a lot of people are ready for unless you're paying attention.
Yeah, he talked about wanting to get back to like the kids and Cartman being stupid and shit like that and avoid the politics. Trump leaks crackdown sends chills through national security world. yeah, he's trying to catch the people that leak all his information to the press and stuff, which says a lot, because apparently these leaks are the truth. You know, he's always saying that the media is lying on them, but why would you be cracking down on leaks if it's lies? But people are basically, you know, saying that he's trying to fire a bunch of people. That he's making changes in the community. Who knows how that shit will endanger secrets and all kinds of stuff. Who knows what they'll do if they find out somebody's leaking. You know, I remember when I think it was Dick Cheney put out some journalist, a journalist had a wife who was like an undercover agent or some, like a security party, and he put her information out there. That's how petty they are.
Put her at risk, dog.
Chris Christie got caught at a beach lounging in New Jersey after he had just closed the beach to the public.
Mm-hmm. Talking about they ain't had enough money, shut the shit down.
And he has said that he didn't get any sun. And then somebody showed them, hey, we got the picture of your ass on this beach. And then he said, what his spokesperson later said, what he meant by that was he was wearing a hat, so he didn't get any sun.
You and 10 other people barbecuing on the 4th of July weekend while nobody else could go to the state beaches, dog.
He then opened up the beach after getting caught. Interesting. The nation's top executive government ethics official has resigned.
Man, when a lot of these people in these high positions start resigning.
Well, remember, they tried, when they first got elected, Republicans tried to close the ethics, the House, or whatever it's called, the House Ethics Committee or something. They tried to close it
to be like, monitor their ethics. Right.
And it got, and it only got opened up because people had such a hissy fit. They were calling their people and shit. And then they got opened up. But I'm like, that tells you exactly what they plan on doing with this country. They don't want nobody talking about it. A Maryland official resigned over controversial voter fraud commission report. Louis Baranda, Maryland's deputy secretary of state, has resigned from President Trump's controversial panel that is looking into possible voter fraud in 2016. Baranda reportedly told Governor Larry Hogan, keep in mind, he's looking for voter fraud because he thinks millions of people illegally voted for Hillary Clinton. Now, this is after winning. He's saying this, that he thinks that's what happened, because he thinks he beat her by way more than, because he lost the popular vote and he don't want to admit that. Anyway, resigned from the Trump administration's Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. He informed our office that he's resigned from the committee in May. Trump created a panel in an executive order to, after making a baseless claim that millions of people cast illegal votes for Hillary Clinton. Yeah, that's also a sign that he ain't gonna be able to come back and tell that dude, yeah, I counted the votes and you're right. Because Trump is definitely a fire the messenger type guy. So it's like, I don't even want to be involved with this because I'm not going to lie for you and fuck up my integrity in my career. But at the same time, I know you don't want to hear the truth. The letter asks for names, addresses, birthdays, and party affiliations of registered voters in each state. He also wants all the people's and all Americans' voting information.
Right. And a lot of states are like, fuck you. Why? Why? We're not sending you this goddamn information.
It's ridiculous.
Why? So y'all can go through with laser precision and try to get rid of as many brown people as you possibly can.
Justice Department's corporate crime watchdog resigned, saying Trump makes it impossible to do job.
I believe that. Yeah, I believe that. Trump has been in office over 100 days. There are positions in the government, y'all, where they don't have leadership. You have people that come into work and they ain't got no goddamn boss, y'all, because he hasn't put people in power that could hire people for these positions.
Yeah, I just see this motherfucker got more turnovers than a Wendy's, you know, like,
come on, dog.
More turnover than a fast food restaurant, as far as like how many people come in and quit, people just leaving left and right.
They getting up like, oh, this is what the fuck happened. I'm good, I'm out.
She, Hugh Chen, is a former Pfizer and Microsoft lawyer who also was a federal prosecutor. She had been the department's compliance counsel. She left the department in June, broke her silence about her move in a recent LinkedIn post that sounded an alarm about the Trump administration's behavior. Trying to hold companies to standards that our current administration is not living up to was creating a cognitive dissonance that I could not overcome. To sit across the table from companies and question how committed they were to ethics and compliance felt not only hypocritical, but very much like shuffling the deck chair on the Titanic. Even as I engaged in those questioning and evaluations, on my mind were numerous lawsuits pending against the President of the United States for everything from violations of the Constitution to conflict of interest, the ongoing investigations of potentially treasonous conducts, and the investigators and prosecutors fired for their pursuits of principles and facts. Those are conducts I would not tolerate seeing in the company. Yet I worked under an administration that engaged in exactly those conduct. I wanted no part in it.
Right, she's like, bitch, I can't do my goddamn job. I can't do my job. And
they laughing me out of these meetings.
Right, I come here telling y'all what the fuck happening, and everybody look at me like I'm fucking insane.
Lindsay Lohan tweeted out to stop bullying President Trump. Lindsay, you were doing so good.
Mm-hmm.
You were doing so fucking good. You was doing some type of possible Muslim thing. You was off the drugs. You was getting woke. Everybody was on your side.
We were rooting for you, baby.
Everybody was.
I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. How dare you?
And then you come and pull some bullshit like this.
Come on.
You cannot be an advocate and a support of Muslim people and then also be like, stop bullying President Trump. How about he stop bullying Muslim people?
Right.
You know, his travel bans and all this shit he's trying to do. Like, he probably won't let your ass back in the country.
Oh.
You sound just like them dumb motherfuckers, dog. Anyway, she tweeted this, and someone said, like, her publicist or something said she might have been hacked or whatever. But I don't know. Tweet's still up there. So, I don't know. Just, why? Always running back to that whiteness, man. 53%, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's why a lot of people go, I don't trust you.
Trump said to postpone filing complaint about Comey's conduct because he was always full of shit with that. Talking about, I got tapes and all this shit. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. He's preparing an order requiring food aid be transported on American ships because
he owned the ships. I don't know what the fuck, because he profiting off of it somehow.
Just another way to make it harder. Education Department says it will scale back civil rights investigations. I think we talked about this on Balls Deep Sports. Maybe we talked about it on here too, but basically they're trying to take down the funding for Title IX. Title IX is the thing that when sexual assaults happen on campus, mm-hmm. things that involve the athletic department, making sure that there's men and women sports teams that get the same like type of funding and stuff.
Right.
Title IX is the people that does all that shit. Like when you see Baylor, that like Title IX is behind, like that office is what people is what the resources there are used to investigate that shit. Mm-hmm. Jameis Winston. You know, that's why often whenever there's like a high profile athlete that does something on campus that's criminal, you'll find that they either fire or go after the Title IX person as retaliation.
Right.
Or, or preemptively try to discredit them.
Most campuses have a person like on staff. That's their job.
Right. And keep in mind, like I said, this is not everything that happens on campus involves an athlete. This is just stuff like someone gets raped. You know, who's responsible for investigating that? Keep in mind, colleges often tell you, don't go to the police. We'll investigate it internally. Don't even go to the campus police. And we've found many, many cases. If you listen to Balls Deep Sports, you notice we've talked about many, many cases where universities have been complicit in cover ups. And if it wasn't for the Title IX office, none of this shit would have came to light.
Mm-mm.
Even stuff like, police misfiled a report or, campus police did something where they made it seem like they didn't interview the person or whatever. It's that kind of shit. So, yep, of course they would go after this. You know? He's putting out a very Republican agenda. Like, say what you want to about the dude. This is what Republicans campaigned on. There's no rapes on campus. You liberals are just making it up. It's just girls who want to party and they regret it and just get a gun if you got a problem with it. Shit like that. this dude is making sure that that happens.
And my thing is, so when parents decide, hey, what we not gonna do is you go off to college, we're gonna do something local, community college or something like that. Like, what you ain't gonna do is go off to this big Ivy League university and pay billions of dollars. So you do know what's gonna happen when your attendance drop. You ain't getting all these loans.
But it's every like Title IX is every college.
And that's true. Oh,
so it's not even like I can go to a different college that got Title IX funding. Right. Like,
that's true. That's true.
It's insane. It's what they are doing is fucked up. It will lead to more people getting raped. It will lead to more people getting killed.
Right.
All that stuff. Like,
and nothing you can do about it. They really want people to be in a position where you can't do shit.
Yep. All right, let's move to the lighter white people news. This is a lot. The Queen picked the first ever Black Ikweri, who's a Ghanaian born officer. He will be the most visible man in Her Majesty's side as Prince Philip's retirement looms. I guess this is somebody that protects the Queen or something.
Okay.
He's the first Black man to hold the role of Ikweri, one of the most important positions in the royal household. Ghanaian born Major Nana Kofi Tuamasi Ankara, an Afghanistan war veteran and officer from the household cavalry, is thought to be preparing to take over the role from Wing Commander Sam Fletcher later this year. Tuamasi Ankara's royal career so far has included acting as an escort commander at the Duke and Duchess of Cornwall's wedding in 2011, as well as commanding the Blues and Royals at the Queen's birthday parade. But his new role will mean he could spend more time at Her Majesty's side than even her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh. Since Prince Philip announced that he will be stepping down from public duties this autumn, the new Ikweri could be the most visible man by the monarch's side. Tuamasi Ankara, 38, told the Sunday Times that as a young child he used to watch the trooping of the color with fascination. He said, "I would have never imagined that one day I command the regiment which I'd fallen in love with. From what I've seen in the UK, our cultures really do mix, and if I'm not a good example of that, I don't really know what it is. The paper said the Queen is thought to have picked Tuamasi Ankara personally from a group of candidates. The role of Ikweri, which involves personally assisting the Queen in her public duties, has often been associated with scandal. Oh, Ikweri to George IV, Peter Townsend, caused drama in royal circles when he and Princess Margaret, the Queen's sister, became romantically involved.
Oh, shit.
The Battle of Britain fighter, aged 16 years, Margaret Sr., and a father of two sons from a dissolving marriage, helped her write the emotional statement in which she announced that, mindful of the church's teaching, she would not marry him. The pair separated because the Conservative Times meant that she could not marry a person that was divorced. In another more recent scandal in the role of Ikweri, Major Simon Robinson resigned from his post in 2010 amid allegations of a Buckingham Palace sex scandal. He lost his coveted job for life as Crown Ikweri and amid rumors of an extramarital affair, which he denied furiously at the time. A secretary who claimed she suffered years of racial abuse while working for the Prince of Wales, lost her unfair dismissal claim in 2001. Elizabeth Burgess told a hearing she quit her post at Highgrove, the princess's Gloucestershire estate, because she had been racially and sexually discriminated against. Mrs. Burgess, 39, who was Charles's personal secretary for 10 years, said she was subjected to racist jokes and name calling. She said, "There was always black jokes and names going around because it's the royal family and it's still very protected. It has its own rules and regulations. It does not live in the outside world. People have been able to get away with all sorts of things." But her case was unanimously rejected by the tribunal. Chairman Ogle Harper and Mrs. Burgess said Mrs. Burgess had been a respected and valued member of the prince's staff, and her resignation followed a misunderstanding, not a plot to oust her. So this brother might be stepping into some schism. Mm-hmm. Good luck, buddy.
Good luck, because you know this ain't going to be the Queen. You're going to get the death threats.
Mm-hmm. Lena Dunham slammed by shelter over claim her adopted dog was abused.
Oh, what happened?
Yeah. Lena Dunham apparently had an adopted dog,
okay,
from an animal shelter. I guess she got 4 years ago,
mm-hmm,
and she had wrote a piece in the New York Times about it or some shit, because you know it's Lena Dunham, they let her do whatever she wants, and
yes they do,
what she wants is the most, so she always does that. So she had to write about that shit, but she said lately that her dog was too aggressive, it was biting people and it had challenging behavior. She said it's because the dog was abused. It had been in 4 homes before she got the dog, and she tried, but the dog never stopped this aggressive behavior. So she gave it back to, she gave it to an animal shelter, and somebody reached out and contacted the animal shelter, and they were like, she a goddamn lie.
Oh shit.
Yep. They said, they're denying that her dog had any history of abuse. When she adopted the dog from us, it wasn't crazy. Robert Vasquez, a spokesman at the BARC, told Yahoo Celebrity, if Lambie had a bad past or was abused, do you think Bark would have adopted him to Lena, knowing she's a new star, and put her or the dog in that situation? Vasquez told Yahoo he has pictures of Dunham with Lambie loving on Lena and her mom, which she said would not happen if the dog was abused. It wouldn't be cuddling with her or be in the bed with her boy and her quote-unquote boyfriend in the pages of Vogue. He said, adding, Bark does not lie about dogs' history because that gets them return, and mentally it's not good for the dogs. Yeah. That makes sense. Bark,
yeah,
did not...
And you don't want to have a reputation of people not being able to get dogs from you.
Right. But yeah, that's, you know, a source close to Dunham told Fox News that the 31-year-old had the dog examined by 6 vets who deemed the dog had an abusive past and brain damage. All six of them did, Lena.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I don't believe you.
Dunham responded to Bart's claims on Instagram, said, I did what I thought was the best mother would do, which was to give him a life that provided for specific needs. Dunham wrote in her June 21st post, she had sent Lambie to live at an amazing professional facility in Los Angeles after training or medication or consistent loving dog ownership failed to fix the dog's supposed behavior issues. She added Thursday, I have weathered a lot of micro sandals, but this one hurts the most because of the vulnerability of letting people know Lambie in my story, because I miss him so damn much. Rep for Dunham directed Fox News to the star's Instagram post about the controversy.
You could just gave the damn dog back. The end.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know, dog. If you hadn't made such a big deal about having a dog in the first place,
right,
then it probably wouldn't be that big a deal on the way out. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is, man. I don't trust Lena Dunham like that, because I remember her lying on Odell Beckham Jr. and having to be confronted about that, you know? So, I don't have to care.
Nope, I don't.
Lady Gaga defends Ed Sheeran from online bullies.
Now, who was Ed Sheeran? I don't know.
Ed Sheeran?
Yes.
He's a musician.
Okay.
He's a singer-songwriter. He took to Twitter and quit. In an interview with The Sun, he opened up explaining that mean comments from other people online began to get to him. He decided to take a break from the site entirely to avoid dealing with trolls. I go on it and there's nothing but people saying mean things, he explained. Twitter's a platform for that. One comment ruins your day, but that's why I've come off it. The head fuck for me has been trying to work on why people dislike me so much. I can see that. I mean, you know, he ain't really, he don't really be doing nothing to nobody. Like, ain't like he be in trouble or saying crazy shit. He just one of them people that people always gotta talk shit about. Mm-hmm. Like, when I posted this article on my Twitter feed, someone immediately was like, he need to start looking like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, damn, did you read the article? Because that's exactly why he ain't on here no more. Like, he, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like some mean shit that he couldn't help for no reason. Like, maybe if he stopped dressing like a toddler or some shit. And I was like, okay, people are weird. And then people be mad when you quit. Like, you're not here to be my punching bag anymore.
Right.
Now I'm mad at you because you're not around. Like, people, just the same way people get mad when you block them or something. It's like, you know what? You ain't shit. Fuck you. I hate you.
And
the things you be saying, I never fuck with you. It's like, why are you my friend? on Facebook? Why are you following me on Twitter? Why are you like blocked? And then, when you get blocked, this motherfucker blocked me. What? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you don't think I'm shit. I don't want to be associated with you. Anybody that knows you, like, we not cool. It's my right. You can be mad about that if you want, but I didn't sign up for abuse. I didn't sign up to
come on.
For you to be a fucking punching bag every day.
I didn't sign up for abuse, and that's why, you know, sometimes when people, you know, talk about social media, I think your status matters, because certain people in certain status levels, like as far as followers and things like that, their experience is a completely different than other people's experience that have lower profiles. That's nothing against, you know, people that are not as high profile, but yeah, you get tired of enough of that. Yeah, you get a lot of that, actually.
Yeah. So anyway, I get it. Lady Gaga was defending them and shit. Good for her, you know. Lady Gaga one of those people too. I don't really have harsh feelings or positive feelings for her. Mm-mm. But she don't seem to be bothering nobody most of the time.
She don't.
Mm-mm. Let's see what else happened with these white folks. So, you know Felon Bay?
Yes.
He out here in these streets, y'all.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Felon Bay was spotted on a yacht with this like billionaire heiress, you know, Jeremy Meeks, on a super yacht, kissing this woman named Chloe Green.
Okay.
The billionaire heiress. And y'all know Jeremy Meeks is married, got two kids, got a wife, everything.
Oh.
Yeah. He out in these streets.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Loving all up on this white woman.
That heiress is like, I didn't know this.
Yep. The Top Shop heiress, Chloe Green, was photographed passionately kissing a hot convict, Jeremy Meeks, on board the 118,000 pound a week super yacht last weekend. It was an image which intrigued and titillated. What could Made in Chelsea star Miss Green, 26, possibly have in common with the heavily tattooed former Los Angeles gang member Meeks? And what on earth would her father, disgraced billionaire Sir Philip Green, make of it all? But for one woman, the image cut like a dagger through the heart. Meeks' wife, Melissa, 38, said she had no idea her 33-year-old husband was enjoying the liaison with Miss Green while ostensibly on a work trip to Turkey. She told the Mail on Sunday that the picture left her feeling humiliated and signaled an instant death knell for their 8-year marriage. So she ain't gonna take it, because a lot of people were speculating, like, we don't know what their arrangement is. Maybe she don't care. It was like, let's see, because yeah. That's embarrassing somebody normally, even y'all got a open relationship.
You're like, whatever you do, just don't embarrass me.
Right. Don't be in these streets letting everybody know that you just giving my meat away, you know. I'm surprised it took this long, because you know everybody was trying to offer him some. If they ain't care if he had a record, you know they ain't care he got a family.
Mm-mm.
In her first public comment since Meeks was photographed slinking home last week, only to be rebuffed by a furious wife at the doorstep of their modest 200,000 pound California house they share with their three children. Melissa says, I know it takes two to tango, but she knew he was married. To me, that's unforgivable. My whole world has been torn apart by this. What do I tell our children? My heart is broken. What sort of woman would do something like this to another woman? My marriage wasn't perfect, but I thought it could be saved until this happened. Of course I'm angry at her. What she did is unforgivable, and I'm angry at him too. What they did destroyed my entire world. Did either of them think about the children and how this will affect them? They're the innocent victims in this, and so am I. Last night she branded the photographs brazen, adding, it's all been so public. They weren't trying to be discreet. I've been publicly humiliated, which makes the pain so much more worse. She also said she thought that her husband was away promoting a holiday resort in Turkey when the pictures of him were taken. That's a willful lie right there, brother. Her errant husband begged for her forgiveness after returning home to Los Angeles, saying, I didn't mean for this to happen. Well, looking at these pictures, you meant this shit, bro.
I don't see them.
You put your motherfucking tongue, like your tongue was all on her tonsils, dog. This wasn't you didn't trip and fall into her mouth, bruh. Come on now. What are we doing? Well, are we really about to not take the, well, you know what? Maybe he's the type of person that don't take personal responsibility. I don't know. The picture should show up soon. but she and Meek's nickname the Blue-Eyed Bandit after his police mugshot went viral on social media have now agreed their relationship is over and are set to divorce. Softly spoken and reserved, brunette Melissa, a nurse, could not be more different from the designer clad heiress who proudly boasts about her burgeoning relationship with Meek's on social media. That's the other thing. I'm 38. I did a bid with you. You come home. I gotta compete with 26-year-old rich motherfucking women. Yeah. I'm done. This is over.
Yeah, there's no way for me to compete. So I'm out. We good.
I didn't sign up for it. Yeah, I didn't sign up for this. Mm-hmm. You just gonna leave your kids and shit? Just ridiculous, man. For some woman that disposed, you would just cling to her. I guarantee this rich woman would never sully her motherfucking bank account by marrying your ass. Miss Green is
you were just a good fuck for that time.
Miss Green is a self-styled fashion expert whose father is worth 3.8 billion pounds. Posted on a picture to her 128,000 followers of herself with the male model with the caption, "Just the beginning. We appreciate all the love and all the hate." It's not real to her.
No, it's not.
Your family ain't real to her. Your marriage, none of that shit is real.
It's a game.
Melissa says she barely slept since learning of the affair when an Instagram user she did not know sent her the now infamous image of her husband kissing the heiress with a note saying, "Look at this." Twisting her hands nervously, Melissa, who has lost half a stone through the stress, "First I learned of it was when I woke up and checked my phone. Some random person I don't know sent a direct message with the photograph of my husband kissing that woman. I went into shock. I felt nauseated. It was like a bomb had gone off in my whole world and had been blown apart. I'd never heard of Chloe Green. I thought Jeremy was working." She said she immediately tried to reach her husband, who 4 days earlier had left her home in sleepy Manteca, Northern California, supposedly on a trip to Turkey to promote a holiday resort. Her texts and calls went unanswered. Oh shit, you knew what he was into then. "I was angry, hurt, and very, very upset. I couldn't get a hold of him." Meeks would later tell his wife his phone did not work in Europe, despite the fact he was able to post images from his romantic sojourn along the 164-foot yacht.
You got internet somewhere.
On social media. Right. I get the internet, but I couldn't return your DMs, text messages, phone calls.
I didn't want to pay the fee.
Yeah, the FaceTime. It's different over here when you FaceTime. Along with a clip of him water skiing in the clear Mediterranean waters. And he was with rich people, so you know he could afford it. According to reports, Meeks first met Miss Green at the Cannes Film Festival in May, prompting his wife to question how long their liaison had been going on. What was he doing at that festival? I mean, it's about rich, movies. You just get invited. He's not rich.
No, you just get invited to shit when your people know you. Somebody gave him, but you know, he's a model now. He's semi-famous, and you know, people know. Well, you know, come on. You know, he was slowly kind of getting involved in those circles, particularly after he crossed over, became a professional model.
Okay.
Like that kind of opened up doors for him that otherwise I don't think he would have had.
Who knows when it started? I doubt I will ever know the truth. Melissa said the first contact she had with her husband was when he landed in Los Angeles last Monday. He texted her from the airport to ask if he could pick up their two sons, his biological child, Jeremy Jr., 7, and Robert, 11, Melissa's son from a previous relationship. She also has a daughter, 16-year-old Ellie, and says both stepchildren consider Meeks a father figure. "The worst part about all this is the children. They adore their daddy. Incredibly, that she agreed to allow him to pick up the children and spend Tuesday's 4th of July holiday with him while she was at work as a nurse in the local jail. I didn't want my pain and anger to hurt the children. I'm very hurt and upset, but those children love their daddy. He's been away, and they missed him." The pair finally had a showdown on Wednesday when Meeks brought the children home. Melissa says, "We had it out on the doorstep. I told him how devastated and angry I am. He kept apologizing, not for the affair, but for the way I learned about it. I feel humiliated, not just because my husband was caught with another woman, but for the fact they were so brazen about it. He told me I didn't mean for it to happen like this. Those pictures will haunt me forever. He kept saying, 'I'm sorry, you didn't deserve this.' We talked about divorce. I told him I didn't think the marriage could be saved. He agreed. The marriage is over." The finality of the statement makes her eyes cloud with pain. She says it's all a long way from the start of their relationship early 2008 when they met in Meek's hometown of Stockton, California through mutual friends. His piercing blue eyes and razor sharp cheekbones combined with a body honed from playing basketball bowled her over.
She was there with him while he was in jail.
Mm-hmm. She did a bid with him. I guess black love don't work out for everybody, you know. Papoose, it worked out for him. Melissa's career as a hard-working nurse was a sharp contrast to Meek's, who found it hard to hold down a steady job, blaming his upbringing as a child of a heroin addict mother and a father sentenced to life for murder when Meek's was just a baby. The attraction was instant. He was a very good-looking man, charming and charismatic. We fell in love fast, Melissa says. Meek's was open about his past as a member of the notorious Northside Crips, one of California's most brutal street gangs. 2002, he spent 2 years in jail for theft and was in and out of prison for years for a series of crimes, including resisting arrest. He was once arrested for beating a 16-year-old boy into a pulp and was described by police as one of the most violent criminals in Stockton area. Meeks was has a Crips tattoo on his right forearm and a teardrop inked under his left eye, often said to symbolize a gang killing. Yet Melissa says the man she knew was kind and loving. She insisted that he was never violent towards her, drank only in moderation, and was a good father while he occasionally worked as a laborer. Well, shit, wasn't too good once he got that billionaire money on him. Anyways, congratulations, you played yourself, tried to win the lottery. Let's see, let's get into sword ratchets because we actually got something to do. And of course we'll be back every day this week, so we can do some more Monday.
Yes.
And don't forget, Sword Ratchetness is brought to you by Loot Crate. It's a monthly mystery crate filled with exclusive items from the biggest and best pop culture franchises. Go to lootcrate.com/TBGWT and enter code TBGWT and you get $3 off of any new subscription. They got all kinds of stuff you can subscribe to. They got Loot Wear. They got the Loot Crate DX where you get this big ass box of stuff that's so cool.
Yes.
They got
anime.
Loot Crate for anime, pets, all kinds of stuff. They're starting a sports crate. Woo-hoo! All you gotta do is go to lootcrate.com/TBGWT and pick your box. For less than $20 a month, you can get 6 to 8 items with licensed gear, all kinds of stuff. Next month, keep in mind July 30th is when it returns, Rick and Morty. They gonna have something from Rick and Morty in there. I got Rick and Morty socks in here, Rick and Morty shirts, all kinds of shit. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Bob's Burgers, and Futurama will be featured in the next crate.
Oh, that's gonna be lit.
Mm-hmm. Let me open up this crate over here. Alright. It's my favorite part of the episode.
I know, right?
When I get to see what the hell I got. Well, we got. I'm sorry, I don't mean to get selfish, Karen. Alright, let's see what's in this box this time. All right. Oh wait, this is we already opened one of these boxes. This is a box from last month. Okay, you gotta get the new box. Sorry, Karen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I get the new box.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did we open that one too?
I think that was empty.
Okay.
Was
cool.
Empty.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Karen, be right back, y'all. You know, we sometimes we get a little bit confused on which boxes we open already. But yeah. Loot Crate, dog. It's where every person wants to be, every nerd. Yeah, we look forward to it. If you got to sign up by the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time, so midnight basically, if you want to get that month's box. So if you sign up on the 20th, it's too late, you know. All right, cool. Now we got a box. All right, let's see how you open this one. All right. And this is the Loot Crate DX box I'm about to open. I opened up the I opened up the regular box last week, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. How am I going to be bothered? All right. So we got Fight Club, Diary. It says, I am Jack's thoughts. If you guys watch Fight Club, so you can write up in there. Keep you some thoughts in there. Some of y'all are crazy at listening to this, you know. Talk to the people that live in your heads. Oh my god, Amazing Spider-Man shirt. This is for Karen. It's the cover of the Daily Bugle that J. Jonah Jameson runs, of course. And of course it's, you know, mean. It's, but the cover says, Amazing, Spectacular, or Menace. Spider-Man takes down the Vulture. Vulture cries, he ruffled my feathers.
Aha! That's hilarious.
Yep, and that's all you, Karen.
Woohoo!
We got a Transformers, like water container, like bottle. It's got Optimus Prime transforming in different stages.
Oh.
All along the bottom of the water bottle.
Yeah, dog.
Which is funny. This morning I ate my cereal out of my Hope bowl, so.
I got me another bottle to put something in.
The, pin this month is Fight Club, the soap from the Fight Club thing. Lastly, we have this Deadpool box. Deadpool's Finders Keepers. And I believe this is one of those key finding things where if you're always losing your keys, open that. If you're always losing your keys, like I think they had a Batman one a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it comes with a Deadpool keychain. Right? That's cool as fuck. But it also comes with this stand. It's the gray and black Deadpool. And you take the keychain and stick it right here so you don't lose your keys in your house. It's basically a place you can always keep your keys. Except, you know, look cool while doing it.
I didn't know he came in gray and black.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I had the gray and black Spider-Man in the last box too.
Woohoo!
Yeah, sometimes they had the alternate colors and stuff. All right, so that's LootCrate.com/TBGWT, man. Like I said, bunch of cool shit around my house. I got a whole shelf of just cool looking collectible stuff that I wanted when I was a kid, but my parents was like, we good parents. We not giving you everything you want.
Right.
We got bills to pay. You want to eat? You got some Spider-Man money?
Right.
Well, I do got it now, and I give it to Loot Crate, and they send me Spider-Man stuff. How about that?
How you like that, mama?
Sword-wielding bandit terrorizes staff in crime spree as he and a masked accomplice rob 3 Melbourne shops in 30 minutes. What, are they going for the record? Two masked bandits who carried out crime sprees in 30 minutes. That's one crime spree with three crimes, I believe. I think, that's some bad editing right there. Have been caught on camera terrorizing staff with a longsword. They had time to terrorize between them. Wow. Police have released CCTV footage of the moment the thugs threatened staff at a store in Melbourne Southeast. The man and his accomplice robbed a pizza shop, a milk bar, and a service station. Robberies took place within half an hour of one another in Dandenong, Rowville, and Wheeler's Hill. In the video, one man can be seen wearing a black mask and the second man wearing a scarf over his face and a hoodie on. The criminals escaped with cash, cigarette lighters, and tobacco. So we know they smoke. if you guys see some people in masks smoking cigarettes with a sword, be on the lookout. They some robbers. All right, y'all. We'll be back tomorrow. But first, Karen has something to say.
Oh, yeah. Before we go, I would like to say that I had an uncle that passed yesterday. My Uncle Moselle, a.k.a. Uncle Jody. And we love you, dog. That's all. I want you to know that we love you very much. And so, yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, y'all. So, if we have to, you know, take off a show or whatever next week, remember that. It's because, Karen had a death in the family and stuff. And we appreciate all y'all's kind thoughts and stuff. Because I know her whole timeline about to be filled up with people saying stuff. But we'll be back tomorrow, and we appreciate y'all taking the time out to check out the show. Till then, peace. Oh, wait, hold up. Hold up, wait.
I don't get no love.
No. Two things I forgot to mention. God, I've been doing so much podcasting. One, don't forget we're on the Black Love Matters podcast, Black Love Matters, okay? Mm-hmm. We also, I'm on the Mundane Festival podcast with Chris Lambert,
which is out.
That's out now. I'm also on Project Fandoms podcast, recapping Queen Sugar, if you want to know what I think about that show.
That's out too.
With Nina and the Doctor. We're both on there. And then also, I was on Crown and Collars podcast. It's not out yet till Tuesday, but we recap Love and Hip Hop, the latest season. for Atlanta. And we should be on Sunday Civics with Eljoy. That's one of the reasons we have to leave now, so we can prepare for that interview. So we've been podcasting a lot. Mm-hmm. And tonight we probably be podcasting again after the Walking Dead 2-hour season, season finale.
So another late night remix for y'all.
Right. Now, until next time, I love you.
I love you too, baby. Mwah.